to you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who considers himself to be one of the world's foremost bagel experts. I am Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast voicemail edition, final regular voicemail of the season. And I am very excited to be joined back on the podcast by a man who I like to have here at the end of the season on the voicemail show. And here he is, that you know him from 10 million other podcasts, including the RHAP B&B. He is the Survivor and reality TV go-to guy for Parade.com. Please welcome back to the podcast the great Mike Bloom.
The Bloom bomb has been dropped.
Yes, Mike Bloom is here. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, it's admittedly a bit frigid here on the East Coast. The temperatures are dipping as low as Devin's shorts are. This was a particularly tough episode for me just for one reason. It's around this time of year that I always, like, get jealous of the tropics that the castaways are living in. So when they got to go to that island resort and there's this beautiful helicopter shot of them in this, like, pseudo-infinity pool, and I'm looking at, like, the 19-degree day I'm about to have the next day, I get very jealous.
Yes, the weather is getting cold, but the podcasts are oh so hot.
Okay, Jeff, thank you.
You don't like that?
I don't know. If that's a glimpse of Jeff taking Al Roker's part eventually, I don't know. I don't know if we want to see that future.
Well, Mike, I'm so excited to have you here. I've been looking forward to this all season long to get into everything with you. Of course, you and Liana Boris are doing a great job on the RHAP B&B. I've enjoyed it very much this season, but I do really love getting to talk to you on the voicemail podcast. And I think that a lot of the longtime listeners know the voicemail is my favorite podcast that I get to do during the week. And I really enjoy getting to do this episode of the podcast with you every season.
I completely agree. And thank you so much. I love getting to talk some Survivor with you. Admittedly, I don't even know what we talk about on the B&B at this point. It's like Survivor and Survivor related / English lesson related at the same time. So I'm sure we're definitely going to go off the rails. The train tracks of the tribal council set. We're definitely going to do that on this podcast, but it's still fun to, you know, cross over to the other side of the Survivor podcast stream.
Good. All right. Well, we've got a lot of different stuff to get to on this podcast. As you're listening to the podcast, if you have any of your holiday shopping that you want to be taking care of, multitasking as most productive people are able to do, be sure to check out the robhasawebsite.com/gifts page for all of the offers and links from our sponsors, plus our links for amazon.com. And if you haven't checked it out yet and you are a patron of Rob's podcast or interested in becoming one, we just posted a very lengthy look at my trip to Austin for the Austin Know-It-Alls. Mike, we missed you down in Austin last week.
Absolutely. Everything's bigger in Texas, including the Rahapisodes. I mean, I feel like even though it was winter, if I headed like that far south in the continental United States, I would have gotten sunburned somehow.
No, Mike, it snowed. It snowed in Austin, Texas.
That's true. It stranded my B&B co-host, so we had to get a last minute fill in. So I don't know. Maybe I inadvertently turned the weather there. But yeah, I definitely missed the excuse to head down to big Texas.
Yeah. And I don't mean to, you know, set off so many fireworks and throw off the B&B schedule this week, where Paul Osleson is filling in for you this week.
Yeah, Paul, this is his second week, and I believe actually, I don't know if the B&B will be out at this point, but I believe there was a scheduling difficulty due to other weather for the B&B. So we're running, you know, Jeff did not give us the correct weather forecast as we were scheduling the next few weeks on the B&B, but you make adjustments. Survivor's a game where things are constantly in flux and motion, and the best Survivor players are those that are able to adjust to those circumstances, and I suppose that's true of Survivor podcasters as well.
Mike, let's talk about this season before we get into the details of this latest episode that you have long talked about as a Survivor historian, part of the Survivor Historians podcast, that you really love the train wreck seasons. Joe Mena has described this group as a bit of a train wreck as well at different points this season. Josh mentioned that quote of his the other day about how this season is perfect because it's imperfect. Do you feel like 13 episodes in, you would describe Survivor HHH as one of your train wreck seasons?
Oh, yeah. This season is a messy bitch. But I love messy bitches, so I've been really enjoying this one.
Wow.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Wow.
I love how you can now use that train sound effect after using it for the hype train a couple weeks ago. It really is a utilitarian sound effect, though you probably have deterred Becky from Big Brother 17 from ever listening to this podcast again.
Oh, I'm sure she's a huge fan. Patron.
She's having her own PTSD moment.
So, Mike, you feel like that's... Because I don't know if I have to describe it as a train wreck. What's so train wrecky about this season for you?
Well, I think... And let me also give, like, the disclaimer that train wreck to me does not have a bad connotation. I ascribe this term to seasons like Gabon, like Nicaragua. The most recent one I would say is San Juan del Sur, which I know that when you talked with Jeremy, you really compared the season to. But I love these types of things where, you know, it's almost like an even playing field of people who are not playing extremely well. But for me, I'd rather see entertaining gameplay than necessarily good gameplay. And it's almost because of the fact that everyone is playing an imperfect game, not an invulnerable game, to use Chrissy's winning 12-letter word. That's what makes it more exciting for me, because you can really say, all right, anyone can really go at this point, because everyone's sort of playing balls to the wall, but everyone's aim is just a little off when they're throwing those balls at said wall.
But I don't feel like that this is a season like Gabon where it's like, well somebody is actually going to win this season, where you have, like, you know, Sugar and Bob and Maddie and Susie, you know, coming down the stretch here. So I don't really look at it with those same Gabon-colored glasses.
Elephant dung-covered glasses?
Dung. It's not a bummer.
Yes, if Jillian ever went after Steven, that's the term that she would use to insult him. I could definitely see that. And what I will say is that what sort of separates this season maybe from those other seasons is that I feel like, warts and all, this is a very well-characterized cast, specifically this final five. I think I have seen stuff, and I really do want to get in some point about, like, the fan reaction to this season as well, because it's been super interesting. But I've heard stuff about, like, most unlikable final five ever.
Who said that? About this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's the internet. There's a wide array of opinions out there. I honestly think it's because we're seeing such different shades of their personalities that it doesn't necessarily make them the most rootable. You know, and inherently making someone more three-dimensional, you show some of the sides and the aspects of people's personalities that you might not necessarily like, and so you're less likely to throw your support behind them. But at the same time, even though people might say that, there's been so much talk these past couple weeks about how I could see any of these people winning. I don't know from a strategy standpoint if I can see that, but from a story standpoint, I could see any of these five people winning, and I could say, okay, I could see how they got there from the narrative that they were giving us.
So, Mike, let's talk about this crazy tribal council, and there's a lot of different angles of this. And so Steven and I were discussing the other day about what should Devin have done at this tribal council. Obviously, he upset Ashley with his move to take her out. He put his vote on her. This is a question for you. This is from Zinnia.
Hi, it's Zinnia, like the flower. On Know It Alls, you and Steven discussed whether Devin should have thrown a vote towards Mike to appease Ashley or voted Ashley out unanimously with the rest of the group. But what about a third option? Jeff said that no votes towards Ben would count, not that you were allowed to vote for Ben. So should Devin have voted for Ben in order to keep Ashley's jury vote if he makes it to the final three?
Mike, this is a interesting question to me Do you think that Devin should have and could have put a vote on to Ben?
But first, let me say that with someone as the last name Bloom, I'm very drawn to the name Zinnia. So I'm flattered that she called in. But oh no, that is way, way too cute, because I don't even know how you could like do a more extreme version than a throwaway vote to Mike. But you'd be able to do that by saying like, oh, this is the person I definitely can't vote for. It's almost like voting for yourself, which you are definitely not allowed to do. Yeah.
Well,
at
let
this
me just play
Survivor.
You what Jeff said about when Ben plays the idol.
Ryan, how does this change things? Now we know that if you cast a vote for Ben, it won't count.
But Jeff didn't say you can't cast a vote for Ben. We know we can't vote for somebody if they have the immunity necklace. But did playing the vote ahead of time, could Devin still put the vote on Ben? It sounds like he could.
He could, but the big question is, should he? And I definitely don't think so, because I honestly think that would come off as cowardly in front of the jury. You know, I think that some people, when talking about like throwing a vote to Mike, might compare it to something like JT not voting out Coach, you know, voting with him against Aaron, I think it was. But there's definitive differences between the way Coach views the world and the way that jury or even someone like Ashley might view the world. Even in her Ponderosa video, seconds out of coming out of the game, even though she was a little shell-shocked at first, you know, she rebuffed the hug offer. She then sits down and she's like, yeah, I respect what Devin did. I probably would have done it if I was in his shoes. So considering that quick turnaround, considering the fact that his possible worst enemy on the jury has now done almost a complete 180 back in his direction, that has to bode pretty well for his odds. And I don't think that necessarily saying like, oh, I won't vote for Ashley, guys. Like, I promise, BFFs, I'm going to throw this vote that I know is a throwaway and everyone else knows is a throwaway. I feel like in this like very game respects game heavy jury, they would say, that's not going to fly.
Because once upon a time, Shane Powers had wished for the ability to just want to make my vote disappear. And this would have been a way for Devin to do exactly that.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe actually Shane tried to do that. He tried to do something during the Bob Dog vote, I think. The reason why it was so fakakta was because like he's like, I can't vote for Bob Dog, so I'm going to vote for, yeah, I don't know, Bruce or something like that. So you could probably do that like at that early point of the game when names are flying around everywhere. But when there's only so few people left in the game and there's an entire little jury of people sitting across from you, that you need to sort of have your game reflect well on, especially considering he just got the spotlight shown on him as well by Ben, essentially sitting him down and asking him right to his face, okay, what are you doing in this game? I feel like you need to come across well there at that point in time. And I feel like saying like, oh, well, you know what? Everyone's holding a gun to each other. I'm just going to walk away from this standoff. It's not necessarily the best way to really show off your game to the jury.
All right, let's go to another Michael and let's open up this conversation about the historical significance of what Ben did the other night.
Hi, guys. Michael here. There's something that I really do not appreciate and find quite annoying about the tribal council tonight, specifically the idol play. Every night, Probst will say, I'll go tally the votes. He goes away, gets the urn, comes back, and then he says, if anybody has a hidden immunity idol and you want to play it, now would be the time to do so. Now, as in after the votes have been like collected by him and made by the players. So, are you just as annoyed as me in the fact that we didn't know this was possible before? And do you think the players knew? Can we ask one of them? And I don't know, how do you think this will affect a future vote decision? Thanks. Bye.
Mike, you're a Survivor purist. Did you have an issue with Ben playing the idol before the votes were cast?
I don't want to get into like Samantha semantics here, but it's interesting. From Australian Survivor 2017, of course. I call her Samantha semantics, and that's a nickname that I just pulled out of my butt at the last second. But it's interesting to me because like I wouldn't even call this an idol at this point. The way it was played, it's pretty much like a glorified immunity necklace, right? We're going back to the Hogaboom Hawkins school of, okay, here's an idol that you have to play before the vote. But the way it was done, I'm of like two minds of this. I know that you said on the know-it-alls that you didn't mind it. And I'll definitely ask you if you changed your opinion on that in the past few days. But I guess I didn't mind it here just because it was a plan B had already sort of been formulated, and we don't know actually, you know, if Ashley was the plan A and Ben was the plan B, or if they had reversed that at the last second, and then Ben decided to play the idol. But I wonder what ramifications this moment could have in the future. And my issue isn't necessarily that he played it early, because as you said before, there's historical precedent when, you know, Mike got Joey Amazing's really nice looking fake idol and said, "Hey, Jeff, you know, can you validate this for me?" And he said, "I can't until after the votes." I think it was what's really getting in everyone's craw is Jeff deciding at that moment to say, "Okay, this is a real necklace." Because then it eliminates sort of the gamble, right? Of, oh, then Devin could still vote for Ben. You know, even though if Ashley's going, he could still say, "Hey, I tried to vote for Ben because I thought that's what the plan was." But because he did it then, that sort of eliminates the risk that inherently comes with playing that idol in the first place.
So the risk for who? For Ben, that he might have found a fake idol?
No, that and also the risk of, you know, part of the reason why they really settled on this happy medium, you know, back in the Guatemala phase when they did it before the votes, and then when we had the proto super idol in 12 and 13, the reason why they decided to settle on this happy medium of saying, okay, you can cast it after the votes are tallied, but before they're read, is because it creates this really interesting, almost like a Nash equilibrium moment, like a prisoner's dilemma of, okay, should I play this now? But what if they were tricking me and wanted me to flush my idol?
Right.
What if they're actually voting one of my allies off? When you do that beforehand, that sort of eliminates that game of chicken that you're playing with the rest of the tribe.
Right. The reason why I don't have a problem with it is because I think that Ben gives up a lot of leverage by playing it before the votes are cast, because he has the option to pull back. And I'm not entirely sure that Ben was getting voted out at that tribal council if, in fact, he doesn't play the idol, because I think what we don't know is, did Chrissy convince enough people that Ashley should have been the person to go out at that tribal council? I talked to Ashley the other day, as you did, and I asked her, like, what would have happened if Ben didn't play the idol? Like, was that going to be that 2-2 split vote and then ultimately vote, or 2-2-2 split vote, or 2-2-1-1 split vote? And then you guys would have voted out Ben on the revote. And she said, yeah, that was what was going to happen. But I'd love to find out from Chrissy on Wednesday, you know, did they change that vote up after Ben had the idol? Because there was all this talk about it. And Chrissy says in the episode, okay, I'm not convinced that we should vote out Ben before Ashley. I'm wondering, could that have possibly been the plan? And did Ben flush an idol there at a time when he might not have been voted out?
I mean, do you think there was any chance that Ben wasn't going to play that idol at that tribal
council? Sure. He was going to play it no matter what. But in some ways, I think he made the decision of what to do easier on the group by playing it ahead of time. It was like, okay, well, now we know what we're doing. Whereas if he waits until the votes are cast, his idol is going to work 100% either way. So I think he felt like, I have more leverage with the group now. Hey, I'm going back to camp. Who's coming with me? He was basically the Jerry Maguire of tribal council. He's like, all right, this cowboy hat is coming back with me. Who's coming with me? Anybody?
You had me at secret, secret, secrets, and you put the index finger over your mouth.
Yeah, well, secret, secret, secret garden.
Oh, God. He was definitely trying to pull a Three Amigos there, but I mean, even there, I mean, back when the big moment happened, even I think during the Caramoan podcast, you had Sophie on, who at the time was talking up like, this was not a good move, because it's really tough to try to, like, swing your heft around with that, especially when you're only one person, by saying, like, hey, I'm gonna be completely safe tonight. And I feel like his hand was very, very forced. I wonder if he wouldn't have given it to Jeff right there, right then, if Devin didn't keep poking and prodding him. Because It seems like that tribal council, Devin kept saying, he's not gonna play it, he's not gonna play it. And I wonder if Devin hadn't said anything, would Ben have still played his idol? And then who knows who would have cast votes from there?
And was Devin trying to get Ben to flush it? Was Devin already on board with Chrissy's plan to take out Ashley at that tribal council? Because if it was, I mean, I do think that it is possible that we might have been shown a more exciting story on the TV show of Ben saving himself at the final six when he was going to be voted out, instead of a story where the target shifted to Ashley and Ben found an idol, and then the group got him to flush it heading into the final five. So I think that that is part of the story that we don't exactly know. There's basically two versions of this that this could possibly be.
The timeline for the idol is really interesting as well, because, you know, a lot of people were saying, and you even said it on the know-it-alls, that we sort of got this, like, we're like dipping our toes in the genius waters, the genius lake, if
which
you will,
we love and it. We love that.
Yeah. Yeah, this idea, the Amanda Kimmel of like, oh, we don't know if Ben has the idol. We're just as surprised as the other castaways. But it seemed like from checking out like the secret scenes and stuff this week, it seems like Ben found that idol a good amount of time before they actually left to go to tribal council. So it might not have been as down to the wire as, you know, as he may have thought. And it'll be interesting to hear as well. Maybe we'll be able to talk to everyone else, too, about like if they had. There was definitely a lot of suspicion as to whether Ben had the idol, but if they outright saw anything happen and how that might have even changed plans even before going to tribal council of, oh, there's a very good chance Ben has the idol. Great. Let's just move forward with the Ashley plan, no matter what Ben's doing.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about who knew what with Ben's idol find. This is a voicemail from a different Ben.
Hey, Rob. We heard Chrissy talk about voting out Ashley over Ben, regardless of Ben having an idol. She was also pretty confident in expressing to others that Ben wasn't going to find an idol and did not push people to babysit him in his search. Could it be possible that she wanted Ben to find that idol in order to force everyone's hand in voting out her main target, Ashley?
Mike, is that possible where Chrissy didn't care if Ben has the hidden immunity idol because she felt like that she had a threesome already at that point?
How do we know that's not a different Ben who called in?
That's true. Is that Ben Dreebergen, you think?
Why was Ben so awesome in this episode? Big fan.
Night-night.
Yeah. He looks so good in that cowboy hat. This is Bren from Erdaho.
Ben, was that you?
Your silence incriminates you further, Ben.
I bet that Ben laugh clip pulled for a while.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're able to use it as a sound, as a laugh track for the sitcom that is this. It's the most like disparaging laugh track. Like, it's a very like Beavis and Butthead. Beavis, Butthead, and Ben.
I was going to say Peter Griffin.
Well, he's a Family Guy after all.
Yeah. So is that possible? Now, just to go back to the timeline, though, that Chrissy wakes up, she sees Ben looking for the idol, and she says, well, my plan is, I guess I just have to hope he doesn't have the idol. But at the point that she makes that final three with Ryan and Devin, and she's talking about maybe going after Ashley, does she care if Ben finds the idol? Is that sort of the beauty of her plan of, hey, let's just vote out Ashley. If Ben has the idol and plays it, then he'll just lose it, and then we go into the final five. But let's just make him think he's the target no matter what. Let's not get involved in some sort of cockamamie vote split here, and let's just take the sure shot at Ashley.
Yeah, it's interesting in that it seemed like Ashley was really pushed as this plan B, but to Chrissy, I guess she got so enamored by
plan
this
A
idea.
For Ashley!
Exactly. It's easy to memorize. And I know with 34 days in the game, your bodies are tired, your minds are tired. Just make it that much easier to remember. It's interesting as well thinking about like Chrissy's decision to vote out Ashley, because I feel like it makes more sense than we might initially think. You know, I feel like there's this strategy of like, I like to call it get the goat. It was sort of, you know, created during Cerie's 3-2-1 plan. We even saw it a year or so ago when Hannah decided to target Sunday. And while it might not be like the most sound idea to necessarily win, I feel like it's a good idea to get yourself into the finals. Because this whole onus of get the goat is this person, and it's much easier in the days of Final 2 than it is Final 3 at this point, but this person is going to be sitting in a spot and could presumably be taking my spot and letting me miss out on an opportunity at the finals. I need to eliminate that chance to give me a better shot of at least making the final three. And on top of that, the fact that, you know, Ashley won a couple of challenges, that I could see where Chrissy was coming from in that perspective. Now, is that going to play well to the jury and even to the audience? I'm not entirely sure, but placing herself or placing us in her mind frame, I could see why she decided to say, okay, this is the moment where I need to get rid of her and get Devin on my side.
Yeah, I don't know if Ashley actually was the goat. I know that Jomena said during the season that she was, but I'm not entirely convinced that she was somebody who was going to go up into the final three and get no votes. I just feel like that they looked at her more as like, who is a person who we know isn't going to have an idol, who is a completely safe vote, that there's nothing that could go wrong here.
Yeah, I guess the question is, like, who... I mean, I don't think there really is a goat at this point, which, again, is one of the more exciting things that I find about this season. But I wonder if it's Ashley just because I feel like if one of Ashley or Devin are sitting in the finals, they're great. But even, you know, Ashley talked about this in my exit interview with her. If both of them are sitting there, you know, there's a reason why when AJ Mass does his archetypes with you, there's an in the Marriage of Convenience, there's an alpha and a beta. And I feel like for some reason, Devin would get much more credit than Ashley. So I really couldn't see a situation where she would win because she had plans going to the end with Devin. And so unless he gets eliminated without her knowing, that's the best shot she probably would have of getting to the end and winning, I should say.
All right, let's talk about the idol play heard around the Survivor world. And let's take a question about all of this from one of our listeners who was down in Texas with us that he just moved to Austin, Texas. Here is Asher in Austin.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is Asher from Austin, Texas. I am still smiling for the amazing event last week. That was just phenomenal at the Live and Know It All. My question is about Ben at Tribal Council. When he said secret, 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 is that like a conscious hybridization of Kelly Wentworth, sneaky, sneaky, and Parvati's little like shrug to Russell with secrets when she pulled out her idol? It just seemed so right on in both references as a like spoonerism of Survivor reference. So just curious about your take on that. Thanks. Bye.
Let's hear Ben going to go play that hidden immunity idol.
Because I'm not going home tonight. Secret, secret, secret.
He also like mouths like a finger over his lips, like secret, secret, secret.
So then if we're going with Asher's question here, maybe he's also making reference to when the four horsemen dug up the hidden immunity idol and they were like cartoon shushing each other. Ben might be. No, there's been a lot of stuff talking about like who's the biggest Survivor superfan who ever played. Is it Ryan? Is it Adam? You know, is it Aubrey? It might be Ben without us even realizing, considering he was able to, in one 3-word phrase and gesture, combine at least 3 Survivor contestant gift-worthy moments into one.
So you think that he was consciously shouting out,
"Sneak! Sneaky, sneaky."
Do you think he just was getting it wrong, though? Do you think he's like he remembered there was something like that, but it's sort of like day 36 Survivor brain took over?
Yeah. Like, what is it? Snarky, snarky, shark head. Is that what it is?
Secret, secret, secret.
I think he was searching for another word to say, and he just kept repeating secret without even realizing it, like when Cole was fainting.
Okay, well, since we're on the subject of Ben quotes from that tribal council, I want to play for you what he said right before that, and I want you to tell me if this is or is not an expression.
I don't think Ben knows what he's talking about, and I truly think Ben's going home tonight.
Hey, Jeff. Should we just church this up and get to the point?
Should we just church this up right now, Mike? Is church this up? That's a phrase?
Why do you think I'm the expert on the phrase church this up?
Let's just church this up. Sounds like something out of the RHAP B&B Survivor Mad Libs.
Exactly. That would be the verb that I would put in. Like, is church a verb? Yeah, sure. Let's throw that in there. For some reason, I don't know what church this up means. Does it mean like a gospel choir comes out? Is Ben wearing like a nice, nice hat with plumes coming out of it, wearing his Sunday best? I'm not entirely sure.
Sunday
personally.
Burquest?
What denomination? His best Sunday Burquest? What denomination of church is he speaking about?
I don't know. I googled today church this up. There were no results. for Church This Up, and I don't know.
Wait. Could he be shortening once again due to his malnourished brain? Could he mean Churchill This Up?
Churchill This Up. Well, what does that mean?
I mean, you've been watching The Crown. Would this be a Winston Churchill-like move?
Oh, he's just going to take a moment and Winston Churchill this up? But what does that mean? That somebody should draw a painting of him? Is that what he's hoping for?
Yeah, and then he gets angry and throws the painting away. That's what got Lauren on his nerves so much, is that she drew him for who he really was as a person.
So on all of Google, I found one result for Church This Up. And it comes from a post from mycmbc.com, which I don't know.
I don't think this has any relation to CNBC. It's CNBC,
which is the Crow Mountain Baptist Church. And they have a newsletter, and they're telling people, so when you arrive in church this up and coming Sunday.
Should we just church this up?
Yeah, I still don't understand. Like, is creating a spectacle to church this up? Because I mean, Jesus did create many spectacles in his life. I guess if I could connect those dots, but such a weird phrase to enter in the Survivor lexicon now. Now, someone on Survivor 37 is going to be like, "Oh, got a cathedral this thing."
Now, I would get it if Ben was like Pastor John Raymond and was going to come out like, hey, you guys ready for me to church this up?
Should we just church this up?
Wait, could that be the name of the pastored prank show, Church This Up?
Could I be hearing this wrong? Is the word not church?
Should we just church this up?
I heard church as well. It could be turn, and it just didn't get the consonants, didn't get past Ben's bristly beard. But it sounds like church this up. I'm just like, I know you're probably recording the wand off and it's too late, but that is an entry in the making right there in honor of Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Ben, could you tell us, what did you mean by church this up at that tribal council last episode?
Secret, secret, secret.
Oh, come on.
Come on. You're such a dirty... You're the Survivor devil, Ben. Maybe he's referring to the Church of Satanism, and he doesn't even realize it.
The Church of Satanism. Well, Mike, I'm glad that you brought this up.
I brought up the devil?
I'm glad you brought this up, because, yes, so let's go from talking about the church this
up. Should we just church this up?
No, we're going to stop churching this up, because the name of this episode this week was The Survivor Devil. And I didn't really know a lot about the Survivor Devil coming into this episode. This was the quote from Devin at the start of the episode.
Coming back to camp after tribal, I felt like if they're Survivor gods, then that was a move by the Survivor Devil. Because that was messed up.
That was messed up. And that idol play from the last episode, that was a move. In fact, it turns out that was created by the Survivor Devil. And, you know, we have a great opportunity on this podcast today. We've had a lot of great guests on this podcast in the history of RHAP. And this is a little bit unprecedented, Mike, but we are actually going to be joined today, you and I, two members of the Survivor Press Corps, for the first time that we have an exclusive interview here with the Survivor Devil, who is calling in. Sorry to spring this on you, Mike. Let's patch him in. Here's the Survivor Devil.
I didn't realize he came with music.
It's the phone. It's the devil's phone.
It's the phone.
It's the phone.
It's the devil's
phone.
It's the phone.
It's the phone.
It's the devil's
phone.
It's the phone.
It's the phone.
It's the devil's phone.
Survivor Devil, are you there?
Hello, Rob and Mike. Let me just first say, Mike Bloom, I'm a huge fan of yours.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
I can't wait until you're down here with me, Mike. I've got a whole idea for 1,000 other podcasts that we can do. The B&B, Bloom and Beelzebub.
Well, it'll be a cold day in hell until that happens, though. That also deterred my co-host from flying out, so you may need to be a last minute sub on that one too.
Survivor Devil, everybody was very impressed with the work that you did last week with Ben's idol play. Could you tell us about some of the other things that you have been responsible for in Survivor history?
So many different things, Rob. For one, I was the one that came up with the twist to send two tribes to tribal council, and Malcolm got voted out. Bloom, I know you love that
I was a big fan of that one. You got a fan in that one, in that perspective, Survivor Devil. That's one in your court.
Also, this season, I was the one that came up with the name Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers.
Whoa, oh my God.
Whoa. Survivor Devil, I didn't realize you loved alliteration so much.
Oh my devil.
Also, did we experience, was that your ring back tone, Survivor Devil? Are you from the year like 2008?
I have a flip phone.
Okay, a Motorola Razr. Well, Survivor Devil, how long have you been around? Have you done stuff since, like, the beginning of the series?
No, I came on in the second season. My first appearance was that I actually pulled Mike Scoopin into the fire with me. He's a good friend of
that
mine.
That also makes sense.
I need to talk to him briefly. Bend his ear for a minute.
Oh, boy.
My favorite player. That guy, he's the best. Love that guy.
That's in the Survivor Devil Hall of Fame. Absolutely. He was on your ballot.
He's on my ballot.
Well, Survivor Devil, how do you feel about your name being invoked so many times? I mean, Devin said it this time. I think Joe was talking about Ben playing with the devil. Let's be honest here. Survivor Devil, have you been possessing Ben Dreebergen and using him to make all these crazy moves in the game?
Yes, I've actually been working with him closely this season. That's why he wanted to, I could tell you, that's why he wanted to church this up. He was trying to lose me.
So that's what church this up means, to dispel the Survivor Devil
spirit
within you?
He tried to exercise me. Yeah, that was not going to happen, though.
Yeah, you need an old priest and a young priest. You can only find that in Survivor Nicaragua.
I'm also thinking about starting my own Survivor podcast as well. I don't know if I can wait for you, Bloom. It's called the Survivor Devil's Diner. We're going to get that started next season.
Well, you're going to bring Guy Fieri down there to help you out?
Love that guy, Fieri.
That also makes a lot of sense.
Fieri is fire in Italian.
You, Guy Fieri, and Mike Scoopin traveling around hell trying all sorts of samples. It all makes sense to me.
Also, I just want to say that I hate the wand off. I want that wand off to end. I'm the guy that's been complaining every week about the wand off.
Survivor Devil, that really, that you don't like?
No, it's too long. I wouldn't have a problem with it if it was at the end of the podcast, but I really heard that. I feel like the wiggle room was much better last year. Don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of Shut Up Tim, but...
Well, Survivor Devil, with all due respect, I mean, you are in the business of torture. Shouldn't something, the idea of something torturing you, shouldn't you have some sort of baseline respect for that?
No, I'm very busy. I have so many different things to get to, so many different podcasts to listen to and post about. I post all over. I'm actually an admin on the Survivor Facebook group as well. That's one of my responsibilities.
So wait, are those all these Survivor casuals that post on there that we have a really fun time at on the B&B? I don't know if we can do it in the B&B 2.0, but are you implying that like those are your, I don't know, your demons, your like personal minions wreaking havoc, talking about their opinions on Joey Amazing?
Yes, that I have a bot army on the Survivor Facebook group. All of the ideas that I come up with, I keep them all going and liking and talking about all the things that I did well. So I keep having more clout in the Survivor writer's room.
Oh, wow.
Survivor Devil, how do you feel about the Survivor gods' names being invoked as well? Are you like Satan was a fallen angel, even though I'm churching it up just a tiny bit. Are you in a similar way? Were you a former Survivor god that lost his way?
That's a great question, Mike. No, I was not ever the Survivor god. You know, the Survivor god is very busy, but I am actually the god of Big Brother OTT. So that is the truth about that. I came up with that. And I'm actually working on Survivor OTT right now.
Oh, God. What's going to be in it?
We're going to have the Facebook page vote in all of the different survivors and then let them control what happens every week. It's going to be really exciting. That's coming in 2018.
Oh, boy. Well,
it's also on CBS All Access. That was also my idea.
Were you the one that wrote the rule book that Chrissy went through so meticulously?
Yes. You
is that your Bible? That's your Bible?
That is my Bible, the Big Brother OTT rule book.
All right, Survivor Devil, we're running out of time. We have so many different things to get through with Mike Bloom. Any other parting words you want to tell us about?
Yes, get Rupert back on Twitter. Rob, I'm thinking about becoming a patron. I'd really like to see that happen.
All right, thank you so much, Survivor Devil.
Bloom, keep up the good work. I'll see you soon, okay?
Hopefully not too soon, Survivor Devil.
Bloom and Beelzebub 2019. Mark it down, okay? And shout out to my boy T-Dub on Twitter. Go New York Yankees. Love the Stanton trade. Rack me. I'm out.
There you have it. It's the Survivor Devil, everybody.
Phone. It's the phone.
It's the devil's
phone.
It's the phone.
It's the phone.
All right, Mike, wow. What a huge show this was to hear from the Survivor Devil himself, not Devin.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize I was ever going to channel a Dark Lord in my podcasting career, but here we are.
Yeah, okay, wow. So much going on this episode at the final five, now heading into the finale. Let's go ahead and take a question as well about this move from Devin's perspective. This is JJ from NJ.
Hey, Robin, Mike, for some long time. Also, big fan of the B&B on RJP. Anyway, so I've seen a lot of people being pretty low on Devin taking out Ashley at this final six, and I've thought about this a little bit. I think Devin might have a motive for this move not being shown. If Devin takes out Ben before the final three, he's the only person who was in on the secret agent plan left in the game and can claim this move if he makes it to final tribal.
Bloom, do you like this idea that Devin, by taking out Ashley and then being able to subsequently taking out Ben, then would he be the only person standing? He could take full credit for the big swing in the game at nine.
Well, first off, I'm glad he's a fan of the B&B. I don't know if he'll be a fan of B&B 2.0. We're going in a very different direction. It's south, quite literally, when I inevitably go to the underworld, I guess. Yeah, I guess this is definitely, because I guess you have to wonder sort of if Devin gets to the end, what can he tout? You know, if we're going back to this resume idea, what's sort of like his big headline that he's going to put underneath his name? And you could say the secret agent plan is probably his biggest maneuver there. But at the same time, we can definitely talk about this alliance as well that he has with Ryan and Chrissy, because you think that, like, okay, it seems like the three of them are locked in together, but it seemed like from the secret scenes that I was watching, it seemed like Chrissy and Ryan want to take Mike to the final three and actually just kind of strung Devin along. And there's a chance that now Devin might be going out at five. If, for example, like Ben plays an idol or wins immunity, they might say, okay, let's take out Devin. Now, there's a good chance that they could instead keep Devin around, the old, like, Aris method of saying, well, there's a good chance he could beat Ben at the end, so much better than Mike in that regard. But still, it seems like from what we're being told through the secret scenes with this final three is a little different from what was shown on the show.
Yeah, and if Chrissy can get to the end with Mike and Ryan, I feel like that is her best-case scenario by far.
I would think so. I mean, it's tough with Chrissy because, you know, when you function as sort of, she sort of functioned as the face of whatever alliance she's been a part of. And maybe it's just because, you know, she's definitely a presence in the game. I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, when you are a face of that, you sort of open yourself up to serving as that representative for both the good and the bad. So if people are like pissed off at her and Ryan, they're going to be pissed off at her primarily because they're going to say, okay, she's sort of the emissary of that alliance. But I would say that, you know, if it was a Mike, Chrissy, Ryan final three, I'd say Mike might get a few votes
in there.
It's
also Mike's best case scenario as well.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I mean, Mike, I love Mike. I love that Mike has succeeded so much in spite of himself, in a way. He's very much like a Mr. Magoo or an Inspector Gadget, where he's just sort of like completely like wandering around, completely oblivious to what's going on, but somehow like he solves the crime or he gets through the construction site, even though he's completely blind just because of everything else that's going on extraneous to him.
Is he like Tony? Is he pretending to be a construction worker?
No, I think that one might pass more for a construction worker than the other. Mike works on a different set of pipes, if you get my meaning.
Guys, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a construction worker.
See, I saw that sawdust in the challenge. We do a lot of that down in the lumberyard. Just lots of 2x4s swinging around.
Well, let's go back to the moment from that tribal council where Chrissy did not think that that was that big of a deal what happened. I'd love to talk through all of this with you. And so this is coming up right after Ben played the idol. We had the moment where the Ben bomb went off. Here is that moment from tribal council.
I think that's a little bit more extreme than it needs to be. To sit there and make like this mass explosion at tribal is a little bit exaggerated. I don't think that Ben just necessarily like, blew up the entire game. I think it's just a little ridiculous. That's all.
Oh, Lordy.
forget the coconuts. Chrissy's the real Siskel and Ebert, because that is a harsh critique.
Two thumbs down. I really didn't think it was that great. Sort of went on too long, playing the idol way too early. I didn't think it was that great. And the best part of that is that part where Ben lets out the exasperated sigh towards the end.
I don't think that Ben just necessarily blew up the entire game.
It's think about this, Rob. It's like episode 2, you have Chrissy going through these allies almost like the Terminator style and was like, great, Ben's gonna be my best friend in the game. Now we've gotten to the point where we're going into the finale and Ben is trying to create sound effects and Chrissy is throwing shade at them. It is insane to see how far some and the ebbs and flows that some of these pairings have taken over the course of the season.
Oh, Lordy.
Okay. So, Mike, we've talked a little bit about how Chrissy was throwing some cold water on the Ben bomb. So I thought it would be fun if we could also try and predict some of Chrissy's reactions to some other moments in history, and not just in Survivor history, in the history of the world. Mike, are you ready for this?
Is this going to be like that meme of that one gymnast who wasn't happy visiting the White House? Is this essentially what we're doing here?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. All right. So, Mike, could you give us Chrissy's reaction to Alexander Graham Bell inventing the telephone in 1849?
Okay, it's just a voice. Like, I could just see someone in person. Too unwieldy. Fine, whatever.
I mean, did we really need this? Why did we have to go and invent something that I could talk to somebody? If I want to talk to somebody, I'll just go to their house. I'll just go across the room. It's not that big a deal.
I mean, saying, Watson, come here, I need you. You could just go to the other room, Bell, and just... he's ridiculous. He's being ridiculous, right?
And then they have all these numbers that I have to remember. I know I'm good with numbers.
I can do that, but I don't know if other people can.
I mean, I wouldn't have to write them down, but other people would. The whole thing is just, who needs it? Mike, could we get Chrissy's reaction on July 20th, 1969, when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon?
I mean, I could jump around on my trampoline and it pretty much looks like the same thing, so not that big a deal.
I mean, did we need to go to the moon? It's a giant leap for me. It was a decent leap. Was it a giant leap? I mean,
did we really need to beat the Russians there? I mean, the Russians, they're finding idols all over the place, but I feel like we're in a good spot as a country. We don't need to worry about Russia going to the moon.
I mean, if it was Apollo 1 or 2 that got there, 11, I mean, I think that was a lot.
I mean, I have respect for astronomers. I mean, they do math as I do as well. But I mean, couldn't we put math to a better use? Meh.
What's the use? Why do we have to go there?
Okay.
I like how we've turned Chrissy into Eeyore now.
Yeah, it's all the same.
What's the use? We're all just going to die. Life's but a futile existence, and then we all become math at the end of the day. We're all just numbers and eternal string.
Mike, what about on August 18th, 1920, when the 19th Amendment was ratified, giving women the right to vote?
I mean, gerrymandering and voter fraud, do you think we really should have the right nowadays?
I mean, is this really that big a deal? I mean, I vote for women all the time, so it's really nothing new to me.
And look, with electronic voting, there's so much errors out there, probably less errors if I was doing the tabulating, just saying. But all that being said, what are our votes really going towards?
And then you gotta go and vote every year. It's too
Who
much.
Who needs it? Who needs it? I feel like we really land on aggression by the end of the season here, Rob.
Yeah.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, it was Ben's and the audience's response to that past segment.
On a serious note, though, and I'm starting to buy into my own conspiracy theory of that Chrissy was voting for Ashley at this tribal council no matter what. So if Chrissy is like has the plan together to vote out Ashley, and we've seen Chrissy have like a little bit of a mean streak this season where it's like, oh, you think that was a big deal, or like, oh, I guess your alliance wasn't as tight as you thought it would be. And we've seen her like take some pot shots at people. Like if the vote really was going for Ashley and Ben really did just waste his idol at a time when he was not going to be voted out, like I do kind of feel like that the response that she had to all of that like does make a little bit more sense.
Well, I think that's a little bit more extreme than it needs to be. To sit there and make like this mass explosion at tribal is a little bit exaggerated. I don't think that Ben just necessarily blew up the entire game. I think it's just a little ridiculous. That's all.
Oh, Lordy.
I mean, if she was voting for Ashley and had everybody voting for Ashley, like, I kind of feel like that makes sense what she's saying.
So you're saying it's sort of like because she was going along with the Ashley plan. Let's also remember that going in, she's saying, I could just vote for who I want to. What's the use? What does it all matter at the end of the day if we're going with this like now, I don't know, like existential Chrissy character?
Yeah, but I kind of do feel like it would be this thing where it's like, all right, they're all going in there. Okay, we're going to blindside Ashley tonight. And Ben plays his idol and is like, hey, everybody, in your face, I just churched this up. Like, all right, it's not that big a deal, really. It's not like, I just changed the game. Let's see about that. Let's wait a second. It's not like it's that great.
Yeah, I wonder, because I know there was some whispering, but it's almost like, I think they said at the New York Live show when Joe ended up playing the idol when he didn't need to at the merge, that like, if there isn't a big reaction from your bomb, your bomb did not pay off as well as you thought it did.
The biggest reaction to Ben having the idol was probably from Ben.
Secret.
Like, it's, yeah. You know,
he was trying to hype up the crowd. Like, come on, everybody, on your feet. There's an idol coming around.
I mean, I'm really starting to buy into this, because then even like what Devin says to him when Devin is doubting whether or not he's going to play it, like if they were trying to get him to flush it no matter what, and they were going to vote for Ashley, I feel like even what Devin is saying there is going to make sense.
I don't think Ben knows what he's talking about, and I truly think Ben's going home tonight.
Hey, Jeff. Should we just church this up and get to the point?
Is it just me? Also, is Devin talking on like one quarter speed at this point in the season?
I don't think Ben knows what he's talking about.
I'm pretty sure Devin's on Quaaludes from The Reward.
If Ben has an idol, he should definitely play it right now.
He got a little drunk at that reward, so maybe he's just like hung over from the process. Did you see that video, by the way, of Devin?
Yeah, I saw a clip of it as well.
Where Devin, he's having the time of his life. I think it's called like I Could Live Here. And then in the middle, he pulls a Greg Buist of like, and I just totally think that, whoa, is that my hair? Like a flock of his hair had like fallen onto his forehead, and he just like looks up at it all cross-eyed and bats it away. So maybe he's just like really feeling the effects from that reward. But I don't know, because what I've noticed about Devin is that when Devin knows that something is happening, he reacts in an over-the-top manner. And when he doesn't know that something's happening, he reacts very calmly. It's the complete opposite from what you would usually imagine. Like, remember when Ben told him, like, Ryan has the idol? He's like, whoa, no way, what? Mm-hmm. And then, like, you have this circumstance where he's like, as you said before, you know, Ben will not play the idol.
Ben doesn't even know what he's talking about. He's going home. Like, I think I could definitely see the scenario where they're trying to bait him to play that idol.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was definitely a lot of poking specifically coming from Devin. I mean, there's a lot of, like, posturing between Ben and Devin. We even got at the beginning of the episode with Devin being like, you should have voted me out because I'm going to beat you, even though he has yet to beat him in any individual challenges as of yet. But yeah, it seems like the two of them are really, I don't know, poking and prodding at each other. Maybe it's just because they're former allies in that foursome. But Devin definitely seemed to be the one behind the, all right, I'm just going to really try to, you know, stoke the fires at Ben's feet so that he'll want to jump up and play that idol.
Mike, let's take a question that you probably thought might be coming. Let's go to the Woj, who wants to know about the Survivor finale this week.
Once again, it's time for Who Will Not Speak? As usual, our contestants are three-time champion Rob Cesternino and one-time champion Mike Bloom. They're going to pick three heroes, healers, or hustlers, who Jeff will not acknowledge the existence of at the reunion. The player with the lowest score will win a chocolate thunder from Down Under for their very own. Place your bets now!
Wow, a chocolate thunder from Down Under. Is that courtesy of the Woj?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I want to... no offense to the Woj. I love the Donkey Kong music in the background, by the way. Lots of banana etiquette going on. But yes, the Woj made it clear, as he did on Twitter as well. Rob, there was a lot of contention, a lot of recounts going on the past several months because it was still up in the air as to whether you or I won the Game Changers version of this draft. But I believe I squeaked out a close victory.
Okay. So the Woj tweeted to us the other day, a rewatched Game Changers reunion to get the verdict. According to calculations, Mike was the winner of Who Will Not Speak? Game Changers edition. Rob gained 1 point for Haley Ford, and then Michaela was the big one for me. I think that she got 7 points for me. Mike had Troyzan, who ended up getting a lot of points as well. So 8-7.
He just got it purely by sitting in the third place spot, which is the funny part. Because I think all of us, I remember you and I were both like, oh yeah, Troyzan's not getting anything. And it just so happened that because Troyzan made the final three, and because Jeff decided to describe the tiebreaker rules right there, right then, he almost screwed me over just through that one mechanic alone.
Click, 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 click.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, those were all the notes. That was this running that little counter, just clicking all those number of times that he was getting spoken to.
All right, for our new listeners, let me set up the rules here for the Who Will Not Speak game. We like to do this at the end of the season. Me and Mike have done this every single season for the last, what, 7 or 8 seasons, Mike?
Not 7 or 8. I think it's happened since Cambodia. So maybe I guess it's our 5th iteration.
Pretty sure it's been every season the last probably 10 or 11 seasons at this point. And so that Mike won his first one.
Yeah,
last
like it's probably like at least like 40 seasons at this point that we've been doing it. So I'm happy I finally got my victory.
So the way it works is that we will each select 3 people. You want the lowest possible score. A survivor will earn 3 points if they are asked a question by Jeff Probst. They will receive 2 points for blurting out an answer or something to a question that they were not asked. And they will get 1 point if their name is mentioned by another contestant. Now, Mike, I'd like to make a little bit of a twist, a game-changing twist, an advantage or disadvantage based on how you want to look at it. I would like to put out there, if a player makes the jury and they are not asked a question, then that player, if you pick that person, you get an additional minus two bonus.
That is not an advantage.
I was gonna
come in here actually to make an amendment that one of the three people that we need to pick, at least one has to be a jury member, just because, especially in these like 20 person casts, I feel like it would be unfair of us to just consistently pick
just
18, jury people.
I will also say, I think that this is going to be a season. I think Jeff is going to hit everybody on this one. I have a feeling that like there's not so many just like standout breakouts that Jeff is going to spend the entire night talking to one person. And it's not like we have any business to do with, we have like returning players in the audience or anything like that. So I think that this is a night where there's no reason why Jeff can't get to everybody.
Right, yeah, the security is on lockdown. Sia's not getting into the room, so
yeah,
we should be all set.
So we'll see. All right, so Mike, I will be the first person to get a pick. I have the opportunity to pick anyone on the board, and I feel like that I will say that 2 point bonus is too delicious for me to pass up, just like the chocolate thunder from Down Under, and I'm going to go with your boy, JP Hilsebeck.
And things like that.
Why is he my boy?
I don't know.
He's not my daughter.
Daughter!
Your son?
Yeah, he's not my son. He's not my son. It doesn't even roll off the tongue as nicely. I actually have some experience with the Chocolate Thunder from Down Under when I used to work at an Outback Steakhouse.
Wait, you
worked
at an Outback Steakhouse?
I did work at an Outback Steakhouse.
Oh my God.
Breaking news are happening now.
All right. At this hour, we've just learned that Mike Bloom worked at an Outback Steakhouse. Was that where you first became friends with the Survivor Devil?
Yes, he was sitting in a booth. He was offering, I offered him some loaded cheese fries, and he said, "Sit down, I have a proposition for you." And that's where we drew up a contract that has paid off to fruition to this day. But
Mike, I have to make a deal with you. So you want to be a podcaster, right?
Right. I mean, it's 2011 Survivor Devil. I don't really know what a podcast is, but sure. I mean, I'm an out of work actor. I'm willing to hop on board whatever you want to offer me at this point. Are you an agent, right?
All right, so JP Hilsebeck is off the board at number one. Mike, you get 2 picks in a row here.
All right, well, let me take the other prospective jury member off the board just to, again, net that new advantage / disadvantage. So for my first pick, I'm going to take Desi. She seems like a lovely girl, but she was really not involved, especially in the end game mechanics of these final five and not in any major storyline. So I feel like she's a good pick there. And now I'm going to go back into the pre-jury, and I'm going to go with, again, another lovely person. And congratulations for getting recently engaged, but I'll pick Simone. For my number two pick. And my number two pick, very apt given the way she went out of the game.
I actually could see, first of all, I could see Simone being a blurter. That's something I could see. And then, I feel like that they might feel like that she's a live wire and may want to go to her for something. Like, I feel like that she's a person, if you go to her, she's going to probably give you something good.
Yeah, I mean, well, Lauren told me that apparently Simone would, like, just ask her questions mercilessly. So who knows, maybe Simone will step up and take Jeff's spot by the end of the reunion.
Oh, Lordy.
Okay. So this is a interesting spot. Okay, so I feel like the obvious pick here on the board is Katrina, and I'm sure she will shine on the reunion, but this is not first one out. We're not going to spend, 35 minutes talking with her on Wednesday night. So this is where things get tricky. So I have one more pick, and then you will have the field left. I'm going to go with a man who is a real wild card, but I'm going to go with Lord Bolton, Patrick Bolton.
They look so good.
Yeah, no, look too good. They're sitting on my draft board, Patrick Bolton. I'm sorry.
No questions about whether it was a rock or an octopus at the end of the day. Do you remember that? It was crazy. I was reading back on my notes. Like, I had forgotten how much gold Patrick had given us in those 3 weeks. It seems like it's literal months ago, but like all the shenanigans that he got into, we literally played a game on the B&B the second week of like, Patrick did all these things in this episode. What did he not do? He just did so many ridiculous things. But
no, he was a breakout character. I was going through all of the wand off entries, and I really was surprised by how many octopus / rock wand off songs we had gotten at that point in time.
Don't say that name. The Survivor Devil is going to come back and keep complaining about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's my agent, so you know he's got to be out searching for work for me. Oh boy. All right. Now I could totally agree. I had Patrick in contention as well, just because, like you said, he was such a breakout character, but so much in the season happened after he left. I know that at the time we were like, oh, Patrick, Alan, these big pre-merge characters, but so much stuff has happened after the fact. And there's only so much real estate you can get through in terms of the reunion show that he might be someone who gets passed over.
Yes. So that's why I feel like he's a good pick. That's why he is the number 5 pick overall. And I do think it speaks to that. I think that history will look back at Survivor HHH fondly. I think that there is a lot of really fun stuff that we have sort of like buried under the rug.
I would totally agree. I think that, you compared it to Samuel and Del Sur. I feel like that had a very similar type of reputation as well. I mean, I remember when Samuel and Del Sur aired, people were saying, you know, worst Final Five ever. These people are so dislikable.
Worst season. The whole pre-merge was people were talking about, is this the worst Survivor season ever?
Now, the question is, you know, did that help improve because of people like Jeremy and Kelly Wentworth and Keith coming back in another season? Perhaps, and maybe we'll get an opportunity to see some of these other Survivor Triple H characters
maybe
in other venues.
Also, but Natalie had a great run. I don't think that there is a Survivor in this season that is in Natalie Anderson's league.
Yeah, I mean, we would say that, like, Ben might have a similar, I wouldn't say very similar storyline, but, like, very broad, blurry, similar types of storylines in terms of, hey, they, you know, they got sort of left alone after their allies, their biggest, closest ally got taken out or betrayed them, and now they sort of have to claw their way back from the bottom. But I think Ben is admittedly doing it in a much more flashy and literally explosive way to make it more machinations. And I think Natalie would have a very similar reaction to Chrissy if that happened to her.
Oh, what's the big deal? It's not like you changed the game or anything, you fool.
I'm swiping right on this one.
You idiot. Okay.
You fool!
Mike, who is the final pick in the Who Will Not Speak draft?
All right, so I guess I'll vocalize this since you don't have any more picks. You can't take, you know, anyone else from me. I'm between two blondes here. I'm between Rourke and I'm between the most recent boot of Ashley.
Ooh.
Cause I feel like Ashley, she really, you know, came alive in the past few weeks, but I wonder, again, with only such amount of time, will Jeff go to her? You know, maybe if Devin wins, she'll go to Ashley and be like, Devin was your close confidant, then he betrayed you, he left you stranded in the middle of the ocean, he was not your lifeguard. You know, how do you react to that? But it's tough to think about, like, what other questions
she might get. A little
on
the nose, Jeff. I mean, Jeff, really, that was kind of the obvious question to ask.
Okay, Chrissy. All right. We'll get to you later. But Rourke could be another one like Simone who would be a good go-to. But again, Rourke really didn't have that much in terms of the main storyline of the season outside of if we get like a Chrissy segment of here's all the people that Chrissy betrayed. So I'm between a Rourke and a hard place, aren't I?
An octopus rock in a hard place.
An octopus Rourke in a hard place. I don't know, just for that, because I've given her so much grief, and this is just going to come full circle. I'm going to take Rourke here.
Yes, all right. Rourke on the board for Mike Bloom Izzle. Okay. Put it in Rourke. Okay, so here are the picks. Rob goes with JP to kick things off, first round pick.
And things like that.
And then Rob is also getting Katrina and Patrick. And then Mike Bloom is getting Desi, Simone, and Rourke. And Woj, will be sitting there with a pad and a pencil ready to go.
Or we'll wait another 6 months until we find out.
Yes. No, no. Matthew will keep close tabs on all of this. Okay. So, Mike, you mentioned Ashley as potentially being a person that you were thinking about going with for your Who Will Not Speak draft. I am presuming that you watched the Ponderosa video this week.
Oh, yes.
So let
me
play for you a voicemail from Andrew from Toronto. And he wants to talk about Ashley's Ponderosa.
Hey, Rob and Mike. It's Andrew calling from Toronto. Did you guys see Ashley's Ponderosa video this week? I thought it was really, really funny. I even saw some people on Reddit saying it was the best Ponderosa video of all time. Do you guys have any other favorite Ponderosa videos or Ponderosa moments? Thanks.
So, Mike, was that the best Ponderosa video of all time? I mean, it was not that great. I didn't really think it was that exciting.
Chrissy, what did you think about Ashley's Ponderosa video?
I mean, it wasn't really the greatest one that I ever saw. It had its moments, but I thought it went on a little long.
I think it was a little meta. Like, we don't like when the show gets too meta. That was very meta.
I thought it was meh, and I thought it was meta. It was meh and meta.
Oh, Lordy.
Why do we need the Survivor afterlife? Our lives are nothing but walking shadows after all. Why do we need acknowledgement of what happens after we meet our untimely end? I believe it was Camus who said.
Yeah. All right. So if anybody did not watch Ashley's Ponderosa video, Ashley went through her own existential crisis at the Ponderosa. And it really came up about where everybody in the Ponderosa sort of does like an activity and has something to talk about in the Ponderosa. But for Ashley, this proved to be difficult.
So everyone gets a Ponderosa video, which is why we're here. And I come into Ponderosa and I'm like, oh, you get to do this video. It's super cool. This Ponderosa video, it shows your time here and how you spent it. And everyone has a thing. So I'm like, cool, a thing. I've always wanted a thing. What's my thing?
Okay.
This is fantastic. I will agree that, you know, I'm going to take the fedora off my hat from that one other person. This is not the best Ponderosa of all time. And I think we can definitely talk about some fun Ponderosa moments after this. But this entire montage of Ashley finding a thing is so much fun. I think the highlight for me is definitely the JP back and forth. I don't know if you have that sound clip.
Do. Okay. So Ashley is seeking counsel from the other players about what their thing should be. JP has a suggestion for Ashley.
You need a dolphin watch.
Dolphin.
You know how many dolphins we've seen out here?
That is so boring.
You know how many dolphins we've seen?
How many?
Zero, but you gotta start looking and find them.
He's useless.
Oh my god. That should go on like a motivational poster. Like, you can't watch dolphins unless you start searching for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I think we might see as many dolphins as we have JP questions in the reunion show, Mike.
You know how many questions JP got? Zero. But we haven't asked him yet, so you gotta start looking. You gotta start asking him.
So then she goes to talk to Joe Mena about, okay, what should your thing be? And Joe seems to have a wisdom that I'm not even sure it's possible how he was on top of the ball here. Here is Joe on Ashley's thing.
I think, honestly, this season, I don't think people really got you.
Yeah, how do you know it? People aren't going to get Ashley this season.
Well, my favorite part is that you you cut this out, but Joe walks out of his bungalow saying, okay, whose ass are we kicking? Joe, for some reason, thought there was going to be a throwdown in the middle of Ponderosa and Ashley was recruiting.
He also offered to go in the ocean and drown so that she could come out. And save him?
Well, could you imagine if that was like, your thing is, your fellow tour member is in mortal danger. Go out and save them.
And Joe Mena trying to steal Jeremy Collins' thing, which is surround and drown. So that's that would be...
Oh, I was going to say, Joe was trying to steal Jeremy's thing of taking an inflatable donkey and kidnapping it.
That was a crazy
Joe
story,
Joe would
right?
do that. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, we have to redo our best Survivor NPC and animal moments and talk about Philippe, the Ponderosa donkey.
Yeah, that accidentally got off. Spoiler alert for the Jeremy Collins podcast. But ultimately, so Ashley, completely in search of a thing, and she really didn't have a thing this season, though.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know, like like Desi's thing, as she talks about, was like teaching one of the Ponderosa women how to pageant walk, yeah. And that wasn't really her thing on this season. I also liked Desi in the video was like, oh, you could Irish step dance, and Ashley's like, I haven't done that since I was 5 years old. Could you just imagine Ashley being like, well, you know, it's day 37 to really, you know, get my qualms out about the game. I'm gonna do some river dance.
Yeah. That would be a perfect thing for Ashley to have done in her Ponderosa video. Also, that they're talking to Lauren Rimmer, and Lauren, they're asking her, what did you do in your video? Like, well, I went out and I set crab traps. And then Ashley is like, oh my God, you took all the good things. Like, how is that going to be a thing that Ashley was going to do? She was going to go set the crab traps.
I don't know what I'm doing, but I figured this would be fun to try. Oh, look, a dolphin.
Yeah.
Now it's 2-1.
Sadly, Ashley came to the realization.
The viewers will never know what Ashley's thing is.
Okay, very sad. We'll never know about Ashley's thing, Mike.
as opposed to JP's thing, which we found out a lot about in the very first episode.
Yes.
And things like that.
Well, I guess let's get back
to talking about things like that he's trying to get Ashley thinking about that the whole season. What's your thing?
Yeah, what's your thing? I showed mine. What's your thing? And then Alan Ball can talk about that. But I guess getting back to the question at hand, can you think of any big Ponderosa moments off the top of your head? I have a few in mind, but I'd be inclined to hear from you.
I feel like that the dragons is the number one Ponderosa video of all time. No?
No, no other... you know, outside of Australian Survivor, no Ponderosa videos have come with their own music, so I feel like that has to be the number one seed. But I guess I could think of some other ones. Like, I actually think we talked about this during Ko Wrong. I came onto the podcast for this one when Scott Pollard greeted Kyle Jason in a luchador mask with a Johnny Walker blue.
There are some good fun. I love Ponderosa videos. I really like one during Survivor Philippines where, you know, everybody in the Philippines Ponderosa like all hates each other. And like RC, I think, is being terrible to people. And Penner shows up and he's kind of like the camp counselor. And he gets everybody like starting like to talk to each other and getting along with each other. And he's just like, I mean, how hard is this? We just sit around here and drink. Why aren't we having fun? I just felt like that was a really fun episode of the Ponderosa.
Careful with my old enemy, the Survivor, your impression of Penner, because I have the Survivor Devil on my side now.
Don't make me church this up right now, Blue.
You're right. Is that your second movie, Jonathan? It's the sequel to The Bye Bye Man. The Bye Bye Man churches things up. another fun one. There were a good Millennials versus Gen X one. I feel like the Brett one was really fun. There's also, you talked about this, I think it might have been the Chris Ponderosa there when everyone's talking about like, oh, I'm not really this, I'm not really this.
That
and you
so
have Michelle Schubert just deadpanning, oh, I'm actually a prostitute, I'm not
so
a missionary.
So many funny ones in that season. They were a great season of Ponderosa videos. I mean, the Ponderosa video is fantastic. Everybody should keep watching them so they keep making them. Always good. Mike, this is a question for you regarding this week's Ponderosa. This is from another listener named Mike.
Hey, Robin, Mike. It's another Mike. Just wondering, what would be your thing at Ponderosa?
Mike, when you watch this video, were you asking yourself, what would be your thing and things like that?
I mean, that's a very Chrissy-esque question, right? What is my thing? What do we put on this earth to do?
Does everybody need a thing? Do you have to have a thing?
At the end of the day, when we inevitably expire, are we only represented by the things that are attached to our names? What is a name, really?
Does everybody need one?
Does everyone, who needs a
you
name?
Have to remember what them.
If we just give everyone a barcode, you know, people have multiple spellings, and it's all too much. It's too much.
So, Mike Bloom, what would your thing be?
Oh, boy, that is a loaded question. Much like the loaded fries I offered the Survivor Devil when I was working at Outback Steakhouse. By the way, when I was working at Outback Steakhouse, I never told anyone my last name when I was there.
Because the Mike Blooming on you.
Yep. So I didn't tell anyone my last name for the entire 6 months I worked there. And I went to high school with some of the people. I worked at the Outback in my hometown. So, like, either people completely forgot or they made absolutely no mention of it. It wasn't until somebody saw my name on one of my paychecks that they realized what it was. And then, oh boy, their cup runneth over with Bloomin' Onion puns.
I ordered 3 desserts in 2 steaks. My bad.
Did Joe Mena ever come in, or Sandra?
I mean, both of them have resided in my state at one point in time. So actually, it would not be completely out of the realm of truth if at one point I had served either one of their families. There's actually a Walmart right next to the Outback, so Sandra could have just made a quick hop, skip, and a jump.
Right. So Mike, tell me that. What would your thing be? Do you can you think of anything?
Oh boy! I mean, it would probably be. I'd probably just like walk around and make horrible puns out of everything around me, whether it's the names of the Fijian crew or the things that we're doing. I could attempt to freestyle rap and fail badly like I have the past couple of times.
All right, well, that's interesting that you would... So you would attempt to do a rap. Well, Mike, that's interesting because that it just so happens that another reality star this week just dropped a new hot track on the scene.
Ooh.
Yes, and I know that you cover all things reality TV for Parade.com, not just Survivor, The Amazing Race, and Big Brother as well. And I'm sure you remember Big Brother standout Gina Marie Zimmerman from Big Brother 15.
Oh, she was explosive as the Samsung phone that barred her from that flight that won Big Brother live show.
Yes, this was Gina Marie's Samsung phone.
Okay, that's a little much, Samsung phone. We understand you have defective chipware in you, but you don't need to make a scene at this airport. People just want to get to where they're going.
Yeah. All right. So we have here for you, Mike, Gina Marie Zimmerman. She just dropped a new track. It's on YouTube, and she does, I don't know if I'd call this necessarily a freestyle rap, but she raps, and I'm sorry for anybody who is the Josh Wigglers of the world that are so anti-Big Brother, but let me play you a clip of Gina Marie's rap, and then let's see who would win in this battle rap between you and Gina Marie, if this is your thing, and things like that. Okay? All right, so
yeah,
take it away. This is the new hot track from Gina Marie, and the name of the track is Know Me by Gina Marie.
You like me here, you follow me there. You watch me going everywhere. You think you know who I am? I'm more than just an Instagram. All is not what it seems. Living out the mean dream. I'm a heavy hitter, just not on Twitter. Don't be a fool. I'm still a winner. I'm still a winner. I'm still a winner. I'm still a winner. Winner, 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 winner.
I'm still a winner.
All right.
All right. There's so many things to unpack in this.
That was Gina Marie Zimmery Outman.
I was going to say, I think the anti-Big Brother people are...
Oh, my God, that was so great. I put her up to that. That was fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was going to say, so Survivor Devil, I'm pretty sure I heard you on that track at a couple of points. Was that you? Were you doing background vocals for Gina Marie?
I'm still a winner. Gina Marie is my favorite Big Brother player. Top 5 for sure.
You are so you wear so many hats on your head. You are an agent, you're of chaos, and an agent as well. You're a producer on the show. You're able to possess contestants, and you're also a music backer. Do you have a label? What's the label name?
I'm working exclusively with Frankie Grande right now.
That again makes sense. Put that in the makes sense column.
All right,
is
Mike.
It called Hi Mommy?
I was here.
That's a good drop into the rap that I'm assuming is going to happen. I love the fact that, so Gina Marie's talking about, like, I am more than just an Instagram. But if you watch the video, it's pretty much exclusively photos from said Instagram. So a lot of mixed messages there.
And also, I'm not on Instagram, but, and also she's not on Twitter, but I think she is on Twitter.
Right? Yeah, like, you're just completely setting out a complete different image of yourself. And I just love the fact that she's repeating winner over and over again, because A, it really underlines that accent of hers, and B, I think it's like some sort of psychological thing, like her therapist is like, okay, you didn't win Big Brother, just write down the word winner like 5 times a day and that'll make you feel better.
Now, that is Gina Marie contesting the results of Big Brother 15? Did she ever officially concede Big Brother 15 to Andy Harris?
Yeah, the Big Brother devil, he's working with me. He worked really well in OTT. I contest these results. I refuse to concede.
Hey, don't waste all this gold on Gina Marie's rap. That she's already got a track down, Mike. And now it's your turn. Are you ready?
Okay. Is it the same beat?
Yes, I got the same beat as Gina Marie. Here we go, Mike.
I am more than just a Twitter, bigger bomb than Mariah's glitter, walking around with a face like Chrissy, big bomb going off being real pissy, got an idol falling in my lap, gonna go to the ocean and take a crap, like Simone, who won't get a question at the reunion, going to church and go to take communion, church it up, church it up, church it up, what does it mean? I don't know, let's church it up, church it up.
Should we just church this up?
And- yeah.
I was here.
Well done.
Did I win it? Did I win the one vote that counted in this rap battle?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Fantastic work, Mike. Done it once again, that you have matched battle rap wits with Gina Marie Zimmerman, friend of the podcast. And great job for you, Mike.
I guess this means I'm not going to try any chicken parm that she offers me, because it's probably going to get spat in or something.
Right,
she holds a lot of grudges.
She does hold grudges. So, yeah. That's
I'm the winner.
Winner.
I like how the Survivor Devil now sort of sounds like the Mortal Kombat voice. Is that what you also did, Survivor Devil?
Yes. I think the movies. All right.
Just movies.
Let's see. All right. Are we off the rails yet?
We were off the rails, like, probably at, like, minute 5. We haven't even talked about, like, Dr. Mike being called Doc all those times. I'm sure you have some fun stuff about that as well.
Yeah, I only have, like, 37 more questions for you, Mike. Okay, so...
We're getting through them all.
Let's keep going. Let's go to a question for you that came in. This was a topic that a lot of people wanted to know about. This is from Amanda from Philly.
Hi, Rob and Mike. It's Amanda from Philadelphia here. I'm calling to ask whether Dr. Mike or Ryan is right about the cinnamon crunch bagels at Panera. Are they really too small? And is it better to just have a New Jersey bagel? Thanks for taking my question.
I saw you tweeting the other night about the bagel talk. Here was the bagel conversation between Ryan, Mike, and Devin.
Cranberry bagel with honey walnut.
I've had the cinnamon swirl. I thought about it again.
Cinnamon crunch bagel.
It's not that good. Get like a Jersey bagel. So much better.
Toasted with cream cheese on it. It tastes like cake.
It's small, too.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Were they talking about Ashley's thing at that last part?
It's small, too. I don't know.
This is fantastic. I just love that amidst all of this idol paranoia in the middle, we just have these guys like, because you've been on the show, like, this is probably the conversation that takes place like a good 75% of the time, right? That just isn't on the show.
Yeah. So much that, you know, everyone is like, does Ben have the idol? Who knows? I looked everywhere for it. Let's get back to talking about the bagels, okay?
Now, down at the construction site, we really dig into the cinnamon crunch bagel while we're catcalling. Hey, good looking. Do you know Ethan?
Yeah, and it's so funny because Ethan, when the season is called Survivor HHH, that Ethan's been calling it Survivor H&H Bagel. So
I was going to say, Survivor Easy Cinnamon Crunch. Mike loves the easy Survivor cinnamon crunch bagel.
Yeah. So I just want to hear these takes one more time and see if we can accurately assess them and who's saying what.
Cranberry bagel with honey walnut.
Cranberry bagel. This is get out of here with that, Devin.
This sounds cranberries. I've never heard of a cranberry bagel. Maybe just because and first of all, I'm much more versed in the topic of bagels than I am in church. So I'm happy that this conversation came my way. But I've never had a cranberry bagel in my life. I'm not a fan of cranberries in general. But that doesn't sound like a good combination to me.
They look so good.
No, Patrick, get out of here with your crazy cockamamie bagel.
Crab bagel.
Yeah.
I'd have a crab bagel in my pants. I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
It's in my pants.
No. Cranberry bagel. Get out of here with that. That's not even in the topic of conversation.
The cinnamon swirl. No, what about it again?
The cinnamon swirl. Ryan, have you had a cinnamon swirl bagel, Mike?
I've tried it before, and I definitely am in the camp of Ryan here. I'm not a fan of, like, the sweet bagels, personally. We're about to get to Dr. Mike, who apparently has a big old sweet tooth and loves the bagels that taste like cake. But, you know, I personally am a fan of, like, I want things that are sweet to taste sweet. I want things that are savory to taste savory. I don't want to, like, cross-pollinate that, you know? That would be like saying, oh, I really want a chocolate chip cookie that tastes spicy. That's really what my taste buds are craving.
Yeah. No, thank you.
It's a lot.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to Dr. Mike.
Bagel.
It's not that good. I've get like a it. Jersey bagel. So much better.
Toasted with cream cheese on it. It tastes like cake.
Mike, have you ever had a Jersey bagel?
I'm not sure what that means.
Is a Jersey bagel any bagel that is from New Jersey, or is the Jersey bagel a specific flavor based on the state of New Jersey? Because I have to say, with all due respect to our listeners in the Garden State, in the secret Garden State, that I would be very suspect of the Jersey flavored bagel.
Oh, yeah. It's going to have what? Like clams from Atlantic City in it, grains of sand from Chris Christie's private beach.
If you're lucky,
like, that does
if
not
you're lucky
sound,
that's what's
yeah,
in
if,
it.
If you're lucky, otherwise you might be sprouting a couple of bulges that might not be associated with an idol out of your back by the time everything's said and done. This doesn't sound
Hey, what's
sound
your problem,
great.
Rob? What, you don't have no Jersey bagel?
All right, Gina Marie, listen, you lost the rap battle. Get off the podcast.
I'm from Staten Island, you a-hole.
I don't know you, apparently, so I didn't know any better.
Hey, back off Mike Bloom. He's my boy.
There we go. See, now we know who the Survivor Devil prefers in his clients now, since I bested you. There can only be one. I sit at the right hand of the Survivor Devil. Please don't pull that and put it in the soundboard.
It's going right next to.
I, on the other hand, was a man whore. I mean, one directly leads into the other, right?
That makes so much more sense now, doesn't it?
It's a real cause and effect.
Okay. Here, let's finish out the bagel take.
It's small, too.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
So, I love Ryan and Mike going back and forth, by the way. They were the perfect pairing at the reward challenge, but it also got me thinking as well. We got Mike, the Doc nickname came back so many times, and I realized, I think we found the perfect cast for our Back to the Future reboot. I think it's gotta be Mike and Ryan.
All right. So Ryan is Marty McFly in this scenario. Yeah. And Dr. Mike is Dr. Emmett L. Brown in this scenario. So what is the plot of Mike and Ryan in Back to the Future, the Survivor HHH edition?
Yeah, I guess it would be that they travel back to Ryan's prom night and try to get him a date.
Ryan grows up. His big regret in life is that he never got to go to the prom. He never had a date. And then here comes Dr. Mike Brown, and he comes back to Ryan to say, Ryan, I'm back from the future. You never went to the prom. You never had a date.
It's about your kids, Ryan. They're gonna stick the penises in rings. It's gonna be a horrible...
We need to get you to the prom and get you a girlfriend because you know that old phrase, if you don't use it, you lose it? That's what happens to you in the future.
You talk so much about what's in your pants. You know what's not gonna be in your pants in about 5 years?
You're too busy worried about bagels. Yeah.
Oh, God. Too small, too small.
Wow. So, yeah, oh, this is an exciting story.
I like this. And then what would be the Biff in this scenario? Like, could we get, like, Devin or Ben to play the Biff character? Could we just bring, or should we bring in another character from Survivor?
Well, I'm trying to think of, like, who they're butting heads with. I kind of feel like that Ben would be, he's a little bit more of a Mad Dog Tannen than, I'm not talking about Marilyn Hershey. Cal.
It's such a constellation. Maybe Joe, even though Joe also would end up working with Mike by the end.
He's a coconut.
Yeah, he's a coconut. But I could say, like, maybe, like, pre-merge yeah. Joe could be cast as Biff.
I mean, do you think that this would be better than the original movie Back to the Future?
It's better than a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, better than a movie, 100%. I mean, there would be, or maybe, I don't know, maybe, now I'm thinking about, actually, it could be Ben or Joe because, like, The idol can be the version of the sports almanac, right? Like, now they found the idol and now they can change everything.
Yeah. Let's talk about the idols, Mike. And let me get to this question from James from New Jersey, home of the Jersey bagel. The most delicious bagel there is. And James has a scenario to run past you.
Hey, Rob and Mixmaster Mike Bloom. This is James calling in from New Jersey. Now, this is a great season and all, but people say it's missing something. I think it needs a storyline much like Spencer and his love for the puzzle, an inanimate object. But what if, hear me out, if the storyline of the finale is Ben and his love for the hip and beauty idol? In fact, I'm calling it right now. I think the real twist is Ben and the idol get the same number of votes in the final tribal council. And you guessed it, the hidden immunity idol wins the season. Not a hero, not a healer, not a hustler, but the fourth H, hidden immunity idol, wins the season. You heard it here first. I want the know-it-all statue if I'm right.
Thank you, James. Thank you for that call. So there's a lot of Thai truthers out there that think that maybe we could be headed to the first final tribal council tie in the history of the show. Mike, do you see that scenario unfolding between Ben and the hidden immunity idol this Wednesday?
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, who knew the silent H was the one who was behind it all along? I mean, let's talk this out, though. The hidden immunity idol might be the MVP of the season, considering it's been involved in quite literally some of the biggest moves of the season, even more so than the players.
So you think that maybe at this round table, we might get some questions like, Ben, you were someone that everybody had a target on your back the entire game, but did you do as much this season as the hidden immunity idol, which was played 7 going on 8 times in 13 episodes of this show?
That's 2 Boston Robs for those of you. He compacted 2 Boston Robs games into 1 season, something I've never seen on the show before at the construction site. It's absolutely magnificent. It's quite the opposite of a Jersey bagel. It's huge. But I think the thing that the hidden immunity idol has going against it is that it has betrayed so many people, like Mike, for instance. I mean, Mike loved this idol, but played this idol completely incorrectly. Is Mike and Mike and Joe can both ask the idol, you know, like, I trusted you. I played you thinking I was going home, and you didn't pay off in the way I wanted you to. Why should I give you my vote?
Because I think the hidden immunity idol is going to say, well, actually, Dr. Mike, you tried to get me out of the game. You threw half of my shell in the fire, and then one of me got voted out, and I still got here to the final 2. So I got to do everything in my power to get to this point. Don't be jealous of me because of what I had to do. I worked with all of you. That I worked with Joe. I worked with Ben. People were looking for me nonstop.
This idol actually has a really great sob story of like, you know, I want my twin sister was going to come out here, but then she fell into the fire. I want to take it home for her at the end of the day. It's what she would have wanted.
I do think that the Hidden Immunity Idol does have maybe the best arc of the entire season.
Yes, I would definitely think so. I mean, considering he's like, I started off being useless. I was only good for one round at best, but they kept me around, and they shouldn't have, because I became so much more powerful in this game. Any advantages come and go, but Hidden Immunity Idols, they last a lifetime.
Yeah. So I do think that the Hidden Immunity Idol could be one of the greatest winners we've had. I think that in the Dalton Ross poll for
season 35. I was going to say, Dalton Ross cast the poll a little too soon. We have to wait until the Hidden Immunity Idol wins and really run the numbers.
Yeah, I think Hidden Immunity Idol could be a middle-of-the-road winner of Survivor.
Oh, yeah, in terms of, like, edgic?
Yeah, I think so. This is a question that came into us via email from Amanda Fallon. Hope I'm not too late, but I'm wondering what your thoughts would be on having a totally virginal, sorry, Jessica, Final Five with no advantages idols out there, or do you want some in the mix to push the finale along? So the only way you could stop the Hidden Immunity Idol at this point is to completely take it out of the game. Mike, would you like to see a virgin Final Five?
I mean, yes. I mean, We haven't really had a virginal moment in this season, I guess, between the advantages and the immunity items. We've been
and Dr. Mike's Twitter messages.
I was going to say, I mean, it's kind of been a man-whore-y season in that regard. Maybe that's why I like it so much, just because we've just been so besotted.
I, on the other hand, was a man-whore.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's why I hold this season close to my heart and maybe close to
things. Easy.
I know. Sorry, Survivor Devil. I won't dance too much with you. But I feel like while I do think that, like, I can understand where people are saying from with, like, this being too much of an overkill and that, you know, as you mentioned, going on 8 idols in one season. I mean, from, like, a production standpoint, do you think they could have averted this at all? Do you think they should have stopped it at a certain point? Because I think the issue isn't necessarily like the idols that were in the game. I think it was just the frequency that they were being played, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've said this as well, that the idol rules didn't change this season. This was not a season where Survivor said, all right, this season we got a great new twist. We're going to have like 10,000 idols hidden all across the beach. That people got them, they found them, they played them, and then they went back into circulation so many different times. So that's really what the issue has been. I think the thing that you could potentially look at is, should they be harder to find? But I do think that Survivor likes the idea of there being an idol in play for every single vote. I just don't think that Survivor counted on the idol being played so many times, especially post-merge. I mean, think about the tribal councils since the merge, that Joe played an idol at the first vote. Then Mike played an idol at the third vote. Ryan played an idol. And then Ben has played an idol in back-to-back weeks. So what is that? 5 idols have been played since the merge?
Yeah, and basically every other week with
and
Ben.
And also a idol went out of the game in Lauren's pocket.
Yeah, so if you think about it, I don't think there's ever been more than 2 of them in the game at any point in time, which is crazy comparing this to even a season like Game Changers, where there were technically 3 idols in the game at one point in time. It's just they held on to them and decided not to play them until the very last second. This is a case where there's just a quick turnover rate, and so it's looking much more populous than initially expected. So I guess the solution would be either A, make them harder to find, or B, only have 1 idol in the game at any point in time. Because I think this season, like I said before, there were always 2, except for this past couple weeks when we got rid of a couple of them at once. But if you shorten them down to 1, maybe that makes things a little more conservative in that regard. But I think it's personally a matter of, I can understand where people are coming from, but I think it's sort of like a matter of circumstances.
All right, Mike, let me play you a couple other questions. This is from one of our listeners who is very excited about this potential Final Five.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Mike. This is the Bath Boy. I have the dream came true. I have my preseason winner pick in the Final Five. I need you guys to tell me, is the sex doctor going to win Survivor? I'm in my bath.
Thanks, bath boy.
Let's listen to that a couple times. Did he say this is the bath boy?
Hey, Rob. Hey, Mike. This is the bath boy.
I was confused at first because, like, the definitive article made me think that, oh, like, should I know who the bath boy is? There was an episode of Friends where Chandler wouldn't get out of the bath. Like, is that who that's referring to?
The bath boy calling in to ask questions about sex doctor Mike wants to know, will he win?
I'm a sex doctor.
Well, bath boy.
Is that where the Dr. Mike stands watch the episodes from? Trying to get to Dr. Mike's benchmark of 21 times a month?
All right, everyone, just simmer in some nice hot water. Tune in, watch me on Survivor Wednesdays at 8. But don't stay in there too long or you'll prune up. You'll look like me, an old guy.
I believe that Dr. Mike has actually recommended people be in hot water to do self-examinations earlier this season. So the appropriate place for the bath boys.
Has Mike made any like holiday themed messages as of late?
Yeah. hold that thought.
Oh, boy.
Okay, give me the scenario, Mike, where Dr. Mike, your namesake, gets to win this season.
I honestly think, we talked about this before, I mean, I don't think he'd win against Devin, and I don't think he'd win against Ben, and I guess I can parlay this into, like, my winner talk as well. I could understand what a lot of people are saying about, like, Ben's totally winning this season. I think some people are saying, like, Ben, like, Mike Holloway-esque edit, like, he's totally winning this scene, but something sort of stuck in my craw where we hear all these things about how if Ben gets to the end, he's going to win. Ben's a total shoe-in. Ryan sent mail at home. Mike says he has a ferocity that transcends this game and the construction site that I even work on. But we get a lot of word from Jeff Probst about, like, best finish ever, which sort of implies to me a very close finish. So there's these sort of two ideas that are butting up against each other in my head, and I don't want to derail too much from the question at hand, but I don't see a scenario where Ben makes it to the final three and it's a close vote. Does that make sense?
So say it one more time.
We have all this talk of like how, oh, Ben's totally going to win if he makes it to the final three. That's why we can't let him get there. But at the same time, you have Jeff saying, oh, it's going to be a super close vote. So I feel like the Ben talk is alluding to like almost like a landslide vote. So I feel like you can have him in the final three, right? Because if he was in the final three, unless someone gives a really bomb jury speech and Ben quite literally bombs again, then it becomes a closer vote. But I don't really see a scenario where this, like, clearly ordained, if this guy gets, much like what happened with David last year, if this guy gets to the end, he's going to be the clear winner. And then he gets there, and then the message is a little muddled of like, oh, now he actually might not win because someone else could win.
So you feel like that in order to have this super close finish that it feels like that we've been sort of had implied to us, that we almost need Ben to be out of the mix.
That's what I'm thinking. And again, I might be reading too much into the, the prophecies of Probst, but it feels like that's sort of what I'm thinking. And I think that we might lose Ben at like our fallen angel, much like the Survivor Devil of number four spot, where like maybe he finds another idol, maybe he wins immunity at five, but he loses out at four and becomes, you know, it was the much like David again. It's this idea of like, we can't let him get there, but he goes on this like pretty big run between idols and immunity wins, but then he gets cut short right before the end of it all.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. That'd be interesting to see. Yeah, not that I'm rooting for that, but I feel like that, I always am excited for the most unpredictable thing to happen in terms of Survivor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unpredictability breeds chaos, and chaos breeds fun, which I guess is, again, me sitting at the right hand of the Survivor Devil in that perspective. But I guess, so I feel like Mike will lose against Devin, and he'll lose against Ben. So like we said before, I feel like his best chances would be up against Chrissy and Ryan, and if there is such a heavy wave against the pairing of Chrissy and Ryan, Chrissy especially, I feel like the votes can get thrown to Mike. Mike is sort of in this weird, like, Fabio-esque position where, what were you good at in this game? Well, I didn't vote for anyone on the jury. What were you bad at this game? Well, I didn't vote for anyone on the jury, you know? Yeah. So I could see a scenario where they say like, well, Mike didn't eliminate any of us really. So, since I'm pissed at the people who did do that to me, deprive me of $1 million, I'm going to go throw my vote to him.
Oh my God. I'd be so excited for a Dr. Mike win on Wednesday.
The stings were worth it.
It was worth it to con the bees. All right, Mike, let's stick with Dr. Mike, and let's bring in a question from the great Colin in Saskatoon.
Hi, Rob and Mike. This is Colin from Saskatoon, and I have a question for Mike. I'm wondering if he has an issue with another Mike, Dr. Mike, going full bloom on Twitter. Love you, Bez.
He took my thing! That's my thing! Damn you, Mike!
Don't worry, Bloom. You have plenty more things like that. Don't worry. He said.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. Things like that? Are you... Is JP one of your acolytes as well?
Oh, Mike. So, Dr. Mike took your name. Mm-hmm. And then he has been on social media all season long going full bloom this season. Does that make you upset?
I mean, yeah, I guess everything I've known about myself has been blown up. I'm left just a shell of a man now.
I mean, Dr. Mike has been tweeting all season long. I actually thought that Dr. Mike had a good shot to win the reward this week when it came down to the ring toss, as we've heard him this season.
Yo, what's up? It's Dr. Mike from Survivor here. Don't fall asleep with something around your penis. It acts like a constriction band. It's just like a wedding ring. If your wedding ring's on your finger, you take it off before you go to sleep.
Yeah, there you go. So Dr. Mike is an expert in the rings.
I don't know, but maybe he was just so conditioned that when he threw the ring on, he inevitably wanted it to fall off. He wanted to pull it on and then push it back off again.
Right. He's an expert in getting those rings off, not so much in keeping them on because it is a constriction device. This week, Dr. Mike has sent me some messages on Twitter.
What?
Including on December 14th. I'm skipping ahead to the social media a little bit. Dr. Mike tweeted, when at Nicole says what gets mad at Rob Sesternino, I'm here to help. And this was a story from the Doctor's TV show about penile reattachment explained.
Wait, but is that in Mike's territory? Can Mike reattach a penis?
I don't know. It seems like he's...
I'll tell you what. I got some bubble yum. I'm just going to stick it right down there. It's gonna work like clockwork. Don't worry, Rob.
Yeah. Maybe this Wednesday night, while he's down at CBS headquarters, maybe he wants to step into Les Moonves' office and say, Les, I've got an idea for a new procedural drama. It's called...
I'm a sex doctor.
Each week, it's a new case. Penile reattachment. Getting the rings off. Stories are endless.
It's a procedural. It's a penis-cedural, where each week, a penis gets in something.
And it's my job to save the day.
Then I have my little buddy, Ryan. He's my deputy. And we have great banter about bagels the entire time in the car.
He's always going off to go look for a bagel. He's looking everywhere. And then there's another guy, Biff Mad Dog Tannen.
This is going to be a soft pilot for our Back to the Future relaunch.
Soft pilot, more like a hard pilot.
Yeah, nothing flaccid about me. That should be your tagline, Les. Nothing flaccid about this show. I'm like Siskel and Ebert. Two thumbs up or two other things up.
And then I've got a partner named Joe. He's the other half of the coconuts.
Yeah, he's like the bad cop. If people aren't talking, he's going to come in there to bust things up.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, Mike.
Listen, I think we're going to take Cochran from his new show and put him on this one. I think the name might imply the work.
All right. Well, if Cochran wants to reach out after he hears about this show, then we'll be able to put him in touch with your agent, right?
Yes, exactly. The Survivor definitely
Mike Bloom won't. Gets 30%.
Yes, please. Give me the money. I also have to go back to Outback and not tell it and go into secrecy again as Mr. X.
We're not going back to the Outback. Trust me.
Yes.
We've got
not
big
going back
things
to the Outback.
Planned for Mike Bloom.
Much like Survivor, we're not going back to the Australian Outback. Good, now Colby can finally come into the conversation. He's been listening for these 2 hours wondering what the hell we're talking about. Now his ears finally perked up.
Okay. Mike, are you ready to get into the Survivor social media from this week?
Hundo.
Hundo. Okay. So, still no word on Rupert getting back on the social media scene. Rupert's Twitter still locked up at this point.
That's crazy.
Free Rupert. Like, hashtag free Rupert.
This should be the next social media movement. Hashtag free Rupert.
Yeah. I'm going to start the change.org. That's going to be my next petition that I'm going to start is free Rupert, everybody. Let Twitter let Rupert. They let all these horrible egg people on the service. They need to let Rupert on there. All these bots and different trolls. Let Rupert back, people.
Well, can we just have Rupert sort of like come in through the back door as an egg person and then slowly grow his own profile again?
The thing about coming in the back door. No, Dr. Mike, come on.
Dr. Mike, come on. Say this prime material for your own show. It's a backdoor pilot, quite literally.
All right. Speaking of Dr. Mike, he tweeted out this week, how many men's health lectures did I give on Survivor? Can Ryan now do a circumcision? He wanted to know. And
I don't know. Considering how like disparaging and urging you were, Ryan, with the knots and the rope, I wouldn't want to put a knife in his hand either.
Ryan replied, unlikely, but now I am more informed about the importance of the prevention of kidney stones. Now, did Ryan learn about kidney stones from the island, or is he saying that he got kidney stones on the island?
I don't know. Joe Del Campo probably tweeted back like too little too late for me.
Well, you listened to Danny on News AF last week.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, again, you have a lot of stuff to talk about. I guess the two main topics of conversation were bagels and kidney stones, you know, the real cornerstones of conversation. Is that going to be Dr. Mike? He's going to, after his show takes off, he's going to get like a View-like talk show where it's him and a panel of people talking about foodstuffs and medical conditions.
Yeah, be exciting. Be a good show. I'd watch it. Then Joe Mena at JoeBenji83 said, told you all that this episode was the bomb. Okay.
So now, is this Joe sort of like covering his own ass? Because I know that Survivor Reddit was all over him because he was like, just wait until this tribal council. And people were sort of like, that was it? Joe, WTF. He's like, no, it's a pun. It was wordplay. You get it now.
My people weren't excited enough. Are you not entertained, people?
Yeah, I don't entirely know. Again, the Survivor fan base is a wide net, and it's so interesting. I guess it's sort of getting back to what I was saying at the very beginning of this podcast before we got into all the shenanigans. But this feels like to me, and again, you know, I feel like you and I are both high on this season, but I feel like across the board, this might be like the most, I don't know, across the spectrum reaction to a season that we've seen in the 30s so far. I feel like from 31 on, people have either had like a really big, good reaction or a really not so good reaction to a season. This is the first time where I've seen people say like, I love this season, I hate this season's okay. And I guess it just really depends on like what you enjoy in Survivor, because I think this season is accentuating certain things while downplaying some other things.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really get inside the psychology of it so much, but I do feel like that for whatever reason, I think the people came into this season and it started slow. And I feel like that it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy of I feel like that some people just didn't want to like this season.
I mean, that could be it. I think, you know, wasn't it a hot take as well? They're like, oh, Josh Wiggler built up our expectations only for them to be dashed. Even though I disagree. I love this cast. And I feel like First One Out did a great job of like us getting to know these people. I might be biased because this is the first season that I'm not only getting to directly interview people, but also had a weekly Survivor podcast going as well. So I guess I was sort of like willing myself to enjoy the season, but I've had a lot of fun with it. I feel like the characterization has been really cool. There's been a lot of, I feel like we've been watching people, you know, not necessarily characters on the screen, people. And yes, that might make them more or less inherently rootable, but at the same time, it makes them so much more interesting from my point of view. And there's so many mistakes being made. There are so many secrets. It's Survivor Secrets and Mistakes. It's Survivor S&M. And when you get into Survivor S&M,
that's my territory.
Yeah, exactly. You get to get a little tied down into things. So, I mean, I can understand where some people are sort of getting their gripes with the season, but I personally been enjoying it so far.
Yes. Let's go to Michelle Schubert. Not the shell that got thrown in the fire, a different shell.
The missing shell, Schubert.
Shell Schubert. She tweeted out, anybody else see all those blankets tonight on Survivor? Where were those on season 33? I was left to cuddle with the world's worst cuddler at Real David Wright. Hashtag, what do I do with my hands? Hashtag Survivor at Jeff Probst. Wow.
Wow, that was a lot of information about season 33 that I didn't realize we were going to get.
Where were all these blankets? Did you see all these blankets?
So there was this one shot when we got into like the sepia tone morning of day 34 when it was Ben and Chrissy sleeping in the shelter and then the other four were sleeping in the sand. I couldn't tell if those were blankets or towels, but they were definitely wrapped up in something. But I feel like, didn't they compete for comfort at some point in the pre-merge stage?
Maybe. Potentially that is a thing. But David Wright asked, what do I do with my hands? And Sunday Berquist replied, OMG, I was thinking the exact same thing. Which part? About the towels or about David Wright?
Could you imagine? I just imagine David Wright being so awkward that he just sticks his hands up prone in the air for the entire night because he has no idea what to do with them.
Mm-hmm. What do I do with my hands? Not touching.
Does anyone know? I'm not touching.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to Alexis Maxwell, who tweeted out, LOL, love that Ben said she's hangry. Hangry is no joke. That was me last night when my dinner took forever. LOLLL.
Laugh out loud, 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 loud.
Alexis Maxwell gets hangry, Mike. Did anybody get hangry when you were working at the Outback?
Quite a bit. I mean, that's what led to not so good tips, was when people got hangry.
Watch out for hangry people at the Outback. Bryce Isaiah tweeted out about this episode, and really, that after his appearance on the voicemails, everybody has been following him closely, what he's saying. He wants to know, did
Gloria
switch off the hairstyle tonight? Okay, boo, I see you. Did daughter come up with a new hairstyle?
Gloria!
Yeah, I guess from what I could tell, I guess she went from the side part to the down the middle part. I mean, Lauren's hair is short enough that there's only really a limited number of options she can do with it. That's the most recognizable change I had. But if we're going in the ranking of topics I am most well-versed to talk about, it definitely goes bagels, church, then hairstyles.
Yeah. This is what Cole had to say.
How did you do that?
Yeah, we don't know. Then Bryce Isaiah, he tweeted out, damn, Ashley, and your Indeed references just called back today. So he kept talking about their resume and Indeed. And he had a picture of like a fax machine of like the papers just going on the floor.
I like this, that like, imagine like denying someone for the job and then getting a call like 3 weeks later and be like, actually, we checked your references. You did enough now. We can give you the job now.
Yeah.
That's your thing.
That's your thing.
It's a lot.
Just don't wash the coffee pot in the office because Stacy's mom is watching
out
for
Stacy's
you.
Mom wants to make sure. Then Eric Reichenbach, he tweeted, really enjoying disliking Chrissy and Devin. Devin for his smugness. Chrissy for her victory smugness when she's winning and entitled outrage when she's losing or on the bottom. Chrissy, what did you think of Eric's tweet? Seen them all. Really?
I mean, it's pretty generic. I mean, Eric's a super fan. Like, he should make more references. I think that would appeal more to the general populace.
Chrissy likes references.
Yeah, I mean, I've been applying since season one. I know just as much as you, Eric. Mm-hmm. I didn't freak out like Jeff Probst with you and your brother, but I also didn't give up immunity, so next.
In those drawings, a little bit. You seen one, you seen them all. Chrissy, yeah, come on. Come on.
I mean, Family Circus does one panel better. I'm just saying.
Jonathan Penner tweeted, hashtag Survivor, another great episode, great play, character, and editing. Still the best. 3 exclamation points.
Wow. Penner, I did not expect Penner to use excess punctuation, but I guess in this age of 280 characters, he can really speak his mind.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Penner is very pro this season. So take that, haters.
Yeah, exactly. But Penner, we got Penner on our side in the pro camp.
Yeah, so among the fans of the season, Jonathan Penner.
It's better than a movie.
Not the Bye Bye Man.
Or Take Me to Church. Bye Bye Man Goes to Church.
Or Bye Bye Man Churches This Up too.
Is that the sequel to Bye Bye Man Churches This Up? Yeah. Or are we just adding all sequel titles?
In the sequel, the Bye Bye Man comes in and churches it all up. It's all churched up.
Well, it's much like, isn't it the Bye Bye Man like, you don't want to know his name? It, church it up, you don't want to know what it means.
If you knew, then
you'd be dead.
You get churched up. And then... Okay. Then... T-Bird, who was really great on the podcast last week, she tweeted, Devin, your assertive gameplay is boss. I would not want to be sitting with you in the finals. It is your game to lose at this point. So T-Bird is a Devin stan.
Would you rather sit next to Devin or a worm at the final tribal council?
Oh, Mike, we've covered it all. We've covered everything going on in the world of Survivor. We're all ready for this week's finale coming up. Is there anything else that you want to touch on?
I mean, I don't even know at this point. It was a jam-packed podcast. A little less jam-packed since Cole had his way with it and kind of scooped it out with his fingers. But all that being said, we really went like around the world and under the world quite literally, and we're back again to tell the tale. So this was supremely ridiculous, but that's why I love coming on to talk with you about this stuff.
Well, I hope you don't mind if I just church this up a little bit more.
Should we just church this up?
A couple other things from the episode. I'm just looking at what I prepared so much stuff for you today here, Mike. I really was impressed with Dr. Mike. That he was able to restrain himself during the entire
cog puzzle.
I really feel like there was a lot of landmines out there for him during the entire cog puzzle, and that he was able to avoid any inappropriate comments during the entire cog puzzle.
Yeah, that cog puzzle, by the way, looked like extremely complicated, though. I mean, I would not want to be in a situation where Dr. Mike has to pull that off of something.
Yeah, Dr. Mike, sadly, was never able to get the cog functioning correctly. He had a lot of trouble, putting the cog together.
I mean, who knew that, like, Chrissy really worked those cogs? I mean, it was really a come-from-behind victory.
Well, I think that's a little bit more extreme than it needs to be.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Mike, come on.
I was going to say, I don't want that noise to be associated with what I just said.
All right. And then, Mike, you know, something, and I am a big fan of the RHAP B&B. You and Liana do such a great job. I really enjoy listening to it week after week. And a couple of weeks ago, you guys were discussing that a little known fact about a recent Survivor, and it wasn't Mookie, but actually Survivor Wu Huang is the star of a movie that maybe might be less obscure than Bye Bye Man 2, Church This Up.
Church This Up.
Yes. You guys discovered the fact that Wu Huang actually was in a holiday film from 2012 called Santa's Summer House.
Yes, I'm assuming it was made because the director thought the world would end in 2012 and thought this would be a hell of a way to go out.
Yes. And so you guys actually were talking about this. Did you remember the context of how that came up?
I believe I was talking about like a Thanksgiving tweet game, which I think we did with Puya, maybe? Oh, no, with Dom Harvey. And Wu had drop-kicked a wall mural of Santa Claus, and I said that was rather ironic considering that Wu had another holiday connection, and now we're getting closer to the holidays, that connection is becoming even more ironic because I guess at another point in time he has met Santa, or at least a form of Santa.
Yes. So the 2012 film Santa's Summer House, you guys mentioned it, and then some of our intrepid listeners went back and actually found that there is a trailer to Santa's Summer House on YouTube. Mike, did you have a chance to watch any of the trailer to Santa's Summer House starring Wu Huang?
It was really on my to-do this, that, the Jurassic Park trailer, the Star Wars trailer, but unfortunately I was not able to find that one.
Okay, so I do have a clip for you from the holiday classic Santa's Summer House, starring Wu Huang, just to set up the trailer, that he is with, I'm not sure if it's a family or a bunch of friends, and they are driving...
Did Wu kidnap a family?
No, they are driving through the somewhere, and they end up sort of like getting lost in a mysterious fog, and this is the point in the trailer when they arrive at the aforementioned Santa's Summer House.
This isn't the place in the brochure.
An hour van ride through Backhouse Twisterama, and this isn't the right place?
No, this isn't the resort. I don't know what this place is. I'm telling you, that fog back there, I've never seen anything like it.
Would anybody like some cookies? Fresh baked from the oven.
Now, this is the Mrs. Claus in the film, but she does not appear like you would imagine a Mrs. Claus, but Mrs. Claus that you would think that maybe would be a little bit more of like a Jillian Larson. This Mrs. Claus is a little bit more of like a Big Brother 9's Sheila Kennedy.
Oh,
paint that picture for you.
Big Sheila. Is Santa Claus played by A Baller then? Because I do not know if I want to go to Santa's summer house.
This is the best cookie I've ever had.
Why don't you guys all stay with us for the weekend? We have plenty of room, and we have all the amenities that resorts have.
Oh, those are very loud jingle bells.
This is you?
This is our summer house. We try to keep work to a minimum. Relax, exercise, enjoy nature.
All right, so there's once again many things to unpack here. First, I would not want to go to a Baller summer house because those cookies definitely have something in them. Second of all, going back to the very first clip, I feel like the big windy Twisterama is what people are calling this season as well.
An hour van ride through Backhouse Twisterama, and this isn't the right place.
I think we just revealed the name for Survivor 38, Twisterama.
Yes.
And also, is Mrs. Claus talking in the Jeff Probst salacious reward voice when talking about the benefits of the house?
We try to keep work to a minimum. Relax, exercise, enjoy nature.
You get cookies.
Get it on!
So, reindeer. How's life over there in the leader's lounge?
It feels delicious.
Feels divine.
Feels divine, nice.
When does Wu describe the cookies as immaculate?
Mike, so what I would like to do is what I'd like to extend the offer, and this is really with a number of asterisks, but if you and Liana Boris are so inclined and a listener, one of our intrepid listeners, can find a copy of Santa's Summer House, I would love to have you guys on the RHAP Rahappy Holidays special to do a quick recap of Santa's Summer House starring Wu Huang.
I mean, this is a fantastic offer. I'm going to have to consult with my agent just to make sure we get all the contractual obligations out of the way. But I don't want to speak on behalf of Liana, but I would definitely be on board for this. Again, if someone can go into the recesses of the dark net and find this 2012 masterpiece, can they go into the big Twisterama and find it amongst all the fog?
I looked for it. I couldn't find it. It was taking me to like some sketchy sites. So you have to do some detective work, much like Ben looking for the idol. I was pretty much like the Dr. Mike where I looked for it for 5 minutes and gave up and went back to thinking about bagels. But
it's not on Google. It's not on Hulu. It can't be anywhere.
I looked all over the dark web. If it was out there, I think I would have found it by now. If anybody was going to find it, it would have been me.
I searched 4chan. I searched RedTube. I searched RedTube again. I searched RedTube 3 times. It wasn't there.
Yeah. Most of the listeners right now are like Chrissy, where I'm just going to rest my laurels on hoping that they don't find it and I don't have to listen to any of this.
Or, to be completely honest, the movie could not exist and Leon and I could just come on and completely make up the movie and then the listeners can decide if this is a real movie or a fake movie.
Yeah, so that would be even better where that you guys, and then I have to vote on who made up the better fake movie, you or Leon. Oh, you can open up your envelopes.
This sounds like a this sounds like a B&B game that could definitely transcend. Or the actual media.
Either that, we'll find it and we'll talk about it, or you guys will make up your own plot for the movie, or we'll do Survivor Mad Libs of the plot of Santa's Summer House, and then we'll go through there.
Should we bring on Sheila Kennedy as a guest?
Yes, I think that would be great.
It's better than a movie.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I forgot to mention that you guys, I think, touched on the B&B, that the tagline is 90s action stars stumble onto Santa's summer beach house. And the trailer does not reflect that in any way.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense from what it sounds like. It sounds like, as you mentioned, Wu kidnapped a nice family at a visitor center in Rancho Cucamonga, drove them through the fog, and they wound up in Santa's summer house.
Yeah.
With opiates abound.
Yeah. There's also some great reviews on the IMDb page as well. But we'll save that for potentially the Happy Holiday special. All right, Mike, here's the question of the hour for you. What is the hashtag?
Oh, my God. How can you represent a 2.5 hour podcast of pure nonsense in just a phrase? How can you look at a rainbow and not tell it to stop being a rainbow? It truly is a rhetorical question. I feel very much like Chrissy.
Yeah. I can't even read half of the things that I wrote down. I think I wrote down full bagel at some point, I think.
we can do Jersey bagel. We can do church this up.
Yeah.
Free Rupert. Mike to the future could be a fun one.
The bath boy.
Bath boy.
Hey Rob. Hey Mike. This is the bath boy.
Oh my God. There are a lot. Rourke in a hard place. That's another one.
There's no shortage of things in this podcast episode, Mike. So I will have Bloom and Beelzebub. So what is it? You make the call.
I like Bloom and Beelzebub because I feel like that Survivor devil became
nobody
a running
spell
bit.
It, though. Nobody can spell
exactly,
Bloom and Beelzebub.
Yeah. So I guess, could we go with church things, church this up too?
Okay, church. Well, it's technically the Bye Bye Man 2 : church this up.
Should we just church this up?
Oh, Lordy.
I was here.
Or we could do... Oh, we could do Chrissy that treat.
Yeah, all right. So many different, Mike, officially, give us the answer.
Oh, boy. Should we just go, I think, church this up. It was like a general theme to apply to this episode. I know we really talked through a lot, but to church this up, much like the Hidden Immunity Idol, who was apparently going to be the winner of season 35, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
That was the true arc that we felt over the course of this podcast. All right.
So, Mike, there you have it.
It's a lot.
Well, Mike, I had such a wonderful afternoon today with you, and I'm sure that this was a great use of your time, that you have the house to yourself this weekend. I'm sure you had nothing else to do than listen to my nonsense for the entire day.
Yes, I had a bachelor pad, and nothing says bachelor pad like sitting in a small room talking into a microphone about pure nonsense for the length of a full-length movie.
Yeah. It's better than a movie.
Someone say full length.
Yeah. All right. So, Mike, here's where we go from here. I got a wiggle room coming up with Josh Wiggler that he's going to be actually in the studio on Sunday with me. We'll get that out on Monday to you guys. And then we are going to have our News AF, of course. And then Stephen Fishback and Sophie Clark are going to man and woman down the coverage for the Survivor finale. And then I will be live at the, well, I won't be broadcasting live, but I will be at the Survivor finale talking with this final five, assuming that they want to talk to me after all this.
I don't know, after this podcast, I don't know how Chrissy's going to react specifically.
Yeah.
And we could go to another Ken of like, I heard you have an impression of me, Rob.
Yeah. They all, you know, they could all get on me at this point. And then we will go through all of that. And then I will have those exit interviews up for you guys by Thursday morning. I'll talk to Josh Wigler after the finale. And then we'll get to some happy holidays. Holiday wand off also in the works. So get those holiday wand off entries in by Thursday morning if you want them to be in the Rahappy holiday show. All right, Mike. So great stuff, of course. Follow a Mike Bloom type. Mike, what are you working on these days besides everything?
Oh, God, just to try to make this podcast half an hour longer. This is all consulted through my new boss and Lord and Savior, the Survivor Devil. I'm doing a lot of stuff. The RHAP B&B, I know we've got a few questions about this because, as you mentioned, the sort of post-finale stuff is always sort of up in the air. We will be doing a post-finale podcast. We're going to take a look at our pre-season predictions about the Final Five. We'll definitely be playing some games. And we brought in truly the person we couldn't have a Survivor Fun and Games podcast without. The Survivor Game Master himself, Miles Nye, will be joining us for the post-finale. And you know, he said he already has a game for us, so I cannot wait to flounder spectacularly and wrap that all up with Liana.
We got a game for you, too.
Yeah. Take that, Lauren.
I didn't realize we got to get a daughter sound drop at the very end of this all. So you can check that out. Liana was also on with Paul Osseson and Puya, so there was a B&B going on. I'll also be covering Top Chef in the reality TV wrap-ups feed with Kurt Clark and Haley Strong. I actually just recorded the Episode 2 podcast earlier today. It's been a really fun season so far. I'm doing SNL recaps over on Post-Show Recap with Rich Tackenberg. We're about to round out 2017 with the Kevin Hart-hosted episode. And then all the other stuff I do reality TV wise is on parade.com. So I'll be doing Survivor exit interviews as well. I've been super grateful for everyone who has been able to click on my articles and my interviews. I've had such a nice time getting to interview the contestants this season. It really has been a dream come true. But I'm also going to be doing some amazing race stuff. I previewed the season 30 teams and I have a nice season 30 surprise as well coming earlier on this week. I'll deliver you a gift to open up in your summer houses as Santa if you want to. Just don't eat the cookies. I'll also be doing probably some coverage of Big Brother Celebrity as well, and I'm doing Top Chef exit interviews there too. And I actually got a really nice opportunity. There was a quick fire challenge that was done live with the judges that I got an opportunity to actually go and see. I got to hang out in the video village and watch it all take place in the room where it happens, and I got to speak to the judges themselves, which was completely surreal. So that's all on parade.com.
Of what show is it?
Top Chef.
Top Chef.
Mike, don't forget about the Survivor Historians.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Survivor Devil.
I got you that gig.
Oh, yes. I forgot that you charmed Mario Lanza and Jay Fisher.
I love the funny 115, by the way. It's hilarious.
Oh, I'm assuming you're its biggest supporter. You helped get it. You contributed to that GoFundMe,
yes,
right?
Yes, I was a big backer. I have a tile.
You're an angel investor?
No, devil investor.
The devil investor, right? You're the devil investor in the Funny 115. But thank you, Survival Devil. Yes, the Survivor Historians are still going strong.
Mario, you owe me big time.
I owe you a lot of things, Survivor Devil. Quite literally my life. And that's why we're going to do a podcast together eventually. If Rob's voice doesn't wear out by the end of this all. So the Survivor Historians, we released a podcast over the course of Thanksgiving. I believe Mario is actually lining up an interview with Coach to happen in the next few weeks about his game and token
chances. I love that guy too. Big fan. Oh, yeah. Love that stuff from South Pacific.
Well, he was talking about the Survivor God, not necessarily Survivor Devil, unless he was misappropriating his talk.
You said it, not me.
I guess you're pleading the fifth on this one, Survivor Devil. Much like the five votes that Coach didn't get at the end of the game. The Survivor Historians will have that interview going, and we'll start Samoa, I'm assuming, with the new year, which is a really interesting season. I've never rewatched it. Rob, I know you have. How does Samoa hold up on a rewatch?
I love that season, too. One of my favorites.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm assuming you have a lot of stock in one player in particular.
All right, Mike
Dave
Bloom,
Ball,
busiest man in podcasting. Great job. All right. Well, thank you. Anybody that listened through all of this, really, can't thank you enough that you are our target audience.
Yes. Thank you, all three of you.
Yes.
Yes. It is your job, you three people, to find Santa's summer house for us. This is your mission and your mission alone.
We love you so much. Thank you so much for listening to all this.
You're okay. You're all right.
I mean.
I'm already anticipating the reviews for that podcast. It's all going to be in that Chrissy voice. It was long. They went on too many bits.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have more than a few comments.
I think it's just a little ridiculous. That's all.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, I think it's just a little ridiculous. That's all.
Yep, that should pretty much be the subtitle for every podcast we do together, Rob. Just a little ridiculous.
I also want to give a quick shout out to people that helped me work on these feedback shows all season long. Matt Price, Randy Neupel, Sam Moore, Shannon Gates, T.U. and Woodruff, and Will from America. Thanks for all your help coming up with this insanity all season long. Can't wait for next season to get back into everything on the feedback show. Thanks again to everybody that listened, patron or not. It really means the world to me that you guys listen to this nonsense. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
You like me here, you follow me there. You watch me going everywhere. You think you know who I am? I'm more than just an Instagram. All is not what it seems. Living out the mean dream. I'm a heavy hitter, just not on Twitter. Don't be a fool. I'm still a winner. I'm still a winner. I'm still a winner. I'm still a winner, 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 winner.
I'm still a winner.